Senate will come to order. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, considerations of bills and general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Cooper.
You can use that water. I haven't.
Oh, okay.
So, pure.
Thank you.
Pure.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Committee of the Whole, please come back to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 111. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 111, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Electric Transmission Consideration of Regional Issues, an act relating to public utilities. It was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martins. Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. Senator Larson, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it. They do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 111. To explain this piece of legislation, I'd like to call on Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member of the Senate, House Bill 111 comes to us as a result of the Western States Energy and Environment Conference that was conducted last summer in Jackson. As you all are very much aware of, the transmission line issue between states and in the Rockies and probably around the country is something that is of very high importance and something we really need to be working together on. There were 12 states that were at that regional conference, and they came up with a list of things that we could do to try to help each other as we look at the growth in the future in our transmission lines specifically. Mr. Chairman, very briefly, what this bill does, it sets up some into statute, and if you look at the bill primarily on pages 2, lines 5 through 23, and then on the top of the next page, and then into our existing statutes on page 3, lines 15 through 19, allows the commission, and the language is made. The first thing is it may meet in conjunction with other commissioners in other states to see if there's a way to develop common sets of facts and planning for regulation. The second thing is they may meet jointly with public utility commissions of other states. And then third thing, subject to 372122, which is our rates statute, the commission may consider regional effects on its orders upon the utility. Mr. Chairman, I attended the meeting in the House where we had the members, a representative of the PSC that came and spoke to us and was supportive of this. One of the things we do is we have the multi-state protocol that's set up now to deal with rate hearings relative to Rocky Mountain Power and then lines that have an effect on Wyoming but are located in other states. And in those multi-state protocol hearings, there's issues that come up, and I think this bill will go a long way towards helping us in that arena. Also, Mr. Chairman, one other quick thing. Congress in 2005 passed a law that said three or more states may enter into interstate compacts to deal with these sorts of issues. It's a pretty straightforward bill. I think it's a good thing. It's timely, and I would ask for your support.
Discussion on the bill. Question B. Oh, yes. Senator Case. Over there in the corner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I confess to have some concerns about this bill, and I'm trying to understand what this bill really means, Mr. Chairman. I'm hoping the sponsors of the bill can help me with that. I mean, a few questions that I might have, for example, this is what happens with this bill, Mr. Chairman, is that you have a large multi-state utility that sits at the table in other states and is trying to build facilities that run across state lines. And I do appreciate the difficulties of that. But we also have in Wyoming, we have a public utility commission, public utility law that requires that our rates be just and reasonable, that property have specific legal designations called used and useful, so that companies, literally when they make new investment, the PSC has to approve that investment. And it's usually done in a proceeding that's, well, there's one going on right now with a very large regional electric utility provider. I think it might be the electric utility provider that's really thinking about in this bill, but they have a rate proceeding going on. And it's a fairly complicated proceeding. It's like a court case, but all parties have an opportunity to participate in this hearing. They can question the other witnesses. There's no presumption of facts in the case, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman. But what I worry about with this bill is that what this bill does is to, like, get the utility involved in the decisions about making these investments before that rate hearing actually happens or before that utility asset is actually brought into the rate base. And what concerns me in that circumstance, Mr. Chairman, just the pure facts of it, are that we have a three-member commission. And if one member of the commission, for example, were to meet and work with this utility and the other commissioners in other states to develop a plan for building transmission or bringing transmission into the rate base, that's done in a process that's not the open rate case process. And so later on down the road, those investments and those assets have to be brought back in and then actually approved. And that's an open process where you can have witnesses and you can challenge the company's assumptions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's appealable. It's appealable to the court. But, Mr. Chairman, if one of the commissioners has already participated in the process, I'm not sure that we maintain our integrity of our system, Mr. Chairman, and that concerns me. And for example, and I don't know, there's no, maybe the lawyers can help with this one, but what the commission may meet in conjunction with the public utility commissions of other states as it determines necessary and convenient to develop common sets of fact finding for regulation. What does that mean, Mr. Chairman? I have no idea. What are the common sets of facts? Are they challengeable? Are other people that, can other persons participate in this issue to challenge those common sets of facts? And then on page 2, lines 16 and 17, under 2 little I, it talks about the commission meeting jointly again to conduct hearings on the regulation of transmission of electricity. So is that a hearing that interveners can intervene in or the members of the public can challenge? Because it says, the last sentence, the commission shall act independently in entering any order as a result of such hearings. What does that mean? What in the world does that mean? I don't know what that means. And if they're independent in that proceeding, are they not independent in the proceeding that follows that the public can participate in, Mr. Chairman? And then here's the bottom part, 3 little I. It says the commission may consider regional effects of its orders upon the utility. That doesn't bother me as much as the next sentence. And may consider requirements imposed upon the utility by the laws of other states. What does that mean, Mr. Chairman? Does that mean that if another state requires a certain percentage of wind energy, for example, that we have to consider that in Wyoming? That bothers me, Mr. Chairman. I'd like that kind of specified out to me. Mr. Chairman, on page 3, line 17, this is existing law. And 372.122, this has been in effect for a long time. But it does talk that the utility can consider, you know, lots of factors here. But then we add, in determining just and reasonable rates for electricity, the commission shall consider, there's that word again, common sets of facts developed in this other non-public process. That bothers me, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to hear more about that. I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any other state doing this sort of thing. I don't mind being a pioneer, but we're the smallest state against one of the biggest utilities in the world. And they do a darn good job. I'm very proud of them. But why would we maybe necessarily start to pre-approve their decisions? And, Mr. Chairman, I did attend they do have the possibility of participating in multi-state jurisdictional meetings now. It's specifically allowed in the law that they can confer, and they do have a process now. I'm trying to wonder why they want to change what they have now to go after this thing called the common set of facts and the fact that they can take advantage of what other states require in setting Wyoming rates. I'm worried. I'd like to hear more, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion. Senator Bebop.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would take from the comments that my colleague from Fremont County has some concerns about this bill. And let's keep an eye on what we're trying to do here, members of the Senate. What we're trying to do is set up a system so our PSC is able to interact with other states that are in the same area of influence that we are within the Rocky Mountain area. You know, if you look at what happens now, okay, you could take a large utility company in order to provide power to this state. They may have to do something outside the state. If you have a power, if you have an energy or company out there that produces a power outside of our state and they're going to bring that into our state, they have costs to do that. If they don't have a way of recouping those costs, how will they ever get those into our state? And that's what you have when we set up the multi-state protocol. And as I understand it, that's what they do now, and they go in and allocate those costs that occur outside our state to our rate-based payers because we have to have a way of allowing them to do that. Otherwise, based on the simple way we do the PSC and how they get generate their internal rate of returns, they get nothing for that capital investment. So if you're asking people outside the state to invest money to help the state of Wyoming yet do not have an opportunity to receive any benefits from that in their rate cases, I would submit to you, why would they ever do it? And that's what the multi-state protocol, as I understand it, is supposed to do. When you have the rate hearings and what we do within the state, and there is a rate hearing going on right now, and there is a large utility that's requested a higher return on their investment and have asked for an increase in their rates, I don't see how this would change what they're doing other than those that occur outside the state that they have to justify to the PSC anyway. I really don't think this gets into the area that you're talking about and concerned about. And yes, it does say that they may do this and they shall do certain things. And that language you talk about that says common sets of fact finding for regulation. I can't tell you the terminology relative to how the PSC looks at that. All I can say is that our commissioners and the testimony I heard was very comfortable with this kind of a language to allow them to do what they want to do, which has had this opportunity to talk to other states, other commissioners. Now, you mentioned in your comments that they're going to go in to have meetings with the utilities themselves. I don't see that in this bill. I see where they're talking to other commissioners in other states. That doesn't mean that they may not be at the meeting. And then if I understood you right, you were concerned about open meetings laws that are, if our commissioners should go to another state and participate, that we might be somehow violating that. I don't think that's what we're doing. I think they're out there getting information so they can be able to make the kind of decisions they have to make. I think if you really want to try to work in a regional atmosphere and try to solve problems together, this is a good opportunity to do that. If there's a way that this comes back and doesn't be fair to the ratepayers of Wyoming, we got that whole process to go through. We all can appeal to that. The PSC has to have public hearings. People have their opportunity. I don't think this affects that.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
I respect highly the concern of my grandfather's contemporary from Fremont County, but you know we've entered into a new generation, and we are all tied together, particularly in the energy field, and how we supply it, we're trying to react to that, and when you look at what we're asking, one of the things we discovered is that if you go to for example, and I'm just pulling them out of the hat, because they're a great state, the state of Oregon, when they start calculating renewable energy, it does not include hydropower. And yet, when we look at it in this state, we look at hydropower as being a fairly green type of energy. If we can at least start the discussion of saying, what are we going to define this stuff as? What's it going to look like? And try and get together on that, it seems to me it makes us all stronger. And it certainly empowers us to start saying we're going to deliver the right mix of electricity to the right places at the right time. And that's really what this is getting at. The other thing, there was some concern on page 2, lines 16 and 17, and I think it's a critical part of this legislation that they can act independently to take care of the interests of this state, irrespective of what other states are doing. We thought that was important to have in there, that they've got to take care of Wyoming consumers. And I agree, they've done a great job, and we want to have them continue to do that. Over the concern over on page 3, lines 16 through 18, again, we're saying this is a regional market. What we generate here, we don't consume the energy that we generate here. And so we've got to participate with these other states. We've got to have a common language with them. We've got to see if we can find common interests with them and see if we can make it all work together when we start talking about a grid and the delivery of energy. It's a whole new ballgame from what it was many years ago. And that's the thrust of this. Let's make some sense out of the way we regulate delivery of energy.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, the days of isolationism for Wyoming energy, I hope, are over. We're now trying to export energy to every direction we go. If we can't go and talk to those states about their problems as well as ours, Oregon was mentioned, perfect example, why should they want to come and talk to us about our concerns with, for example, the wind bill and the wind energy? I think the concerns about this bill is back to a statement I've heard forever down here from my good senator from Natrona County, the tall one, who says, I think we've got things that go bump in the night here. I think that's the case with the concerns here. We're not. This is still allows, as you will look, to us to look out for the citizens of Wyoming. But, folks, we're not mainly consumers. We're major exporters. And so we have to be able to hear the concerns of other states and do it in a legal manner. I would urge you to support the bill.
Senator Case.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I am so sorry I'm so backwards.
It was on.
It was in 1982. NESS was the same company. And the issue in that case was buying power from Oregon, both hydro and nuclear power. We have been part of an interconnected grid for more than 60 years, Mr. Chairman. Every major power plant in Wyoming has been built by this fine company, brought online, and the investment has been recovered via an allocation to other states. That allocation exists now. Right now it's 16%. This is a major deal for Wyoming consumers. Right now, this same company is asking for a rate increase at the Wyoming Public Service Commission of over 13%. And the way that rate increase is going to proceed is that residential customers are paying a disproportional share of that load. And it's in part based upon the interstate allocation of these assets that already exists and exists under the existing law. And every piece of power plant already is allocated and shared with other states. What is new about this? Why do we all of a sudden have to develop a common set of facts? And why all of a sudden do we have to consider the requirements imposed on the utility by the laws of the other states? Now, we may be backwards up in Fremont County, but I assure you, I can smell when something's coming down from other states. And it's not bumping the night. This is the most serious time for this utility and the future of Wyoming. We are an electricity exporter, but we have been for many years. Now we're moving into the big leagues, but let's make sure that it's fair. And this starts to talk about having proceedings that happen before we get to the rate case where everything is fair because everybody's got an equal opportunity. It's not about open meetings. It's about paving the way to get assets brought into the rate base by pre-approved by commissioners that already participate in the discussions and the decisions already made. No different than having a three-panel judge, and you go in there, and one of the judges has already been working with the person on the other side.
Further discussion? Yes, Senator Elliott.
I intend to support the bill because I do think we need to look at the region and bring ourselves so-called up to date with regard to the matters that are there. But I do share both the procedural and the substantive concerns that the senator from Fremont County has raised. Number one, in section 37-2-122, and specifically looking at line 16 compared to line 10 above, the permissive may take into consideration is used in terms of what the commission can look at. But then on page, on line 16, the compulsory shall is the terminology that's used in terms of considering these common sets of facts developed pursuant to and reasonable benefits provided for the utility. And that bothers me because it makes it mandatory that the commission must include those factors rather than allowing them the same discretion that was allowed in line 11 above, or actually in line 10 above. The second concern is one, and I'm not anyone who's really that knowledgeable about PUC rate hearings, but it seems to me that if the PUC or the Public Service Commission is going to take into account regional factors or data that has been previously formulated, whether it's in meetings with other commissioners or other groups, then there needs to be some sort of notice to the parties that are litigants in that hearing as to the fact in advance that this is likely to be taken into account. And that's a procedural due process concern that I have. I don't know if these can be addressed in amendments, but they are concerns that I have with the bill.
Any further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 111, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
The bill has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill, division being called. All those in favor of the bill, please rise. All those opposed, please stand. Didn't miss that by much. Okay. House Bill 111 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 122.
House Bill 122, sponsored by Representative Wallace, Disposal of Livestock. An act relating to livestock. It was assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Geis, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move House Bill 122, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Martin to explain the bill.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 122, Disposal of Livestock. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 122 is needed to give the Board of Livestock three options to use for the disposal of estray and feral animals. Presently, the board only has one option, and that is to sell the animals at public sale. With the passage for this of this legislation, the options of disposal will be public sale, send to slaughter, or to destroy. The need for this legislation became apparent when there were 237 stray or wild horses gathered off of the Sweetwater County Granger lease at a cost of $350 per head to the private landowner. The state became responsible and sold all the horses at a public auction for $1 per head, and they were glad to get that amount. Due to the poor condition of the horses, buyers did not want them. The state dealt with the unbudgeted expense of $12,000 for the feed and care of the horses. And this is just one example of the growing problem, and House Bill will save the Wyoming taxpayers from having to bear these expenses. House Bill 122 addresses the issue of estuary and feral livestock disposal by giving the Wyoming Board of Livestock the authority to dispose of such animals and receive reimbursement for any and all expenses incurred during the time of impoundment. The bill also states such livestock is to be immediately reported by private landowners to an authorized inspector so a diligent effort can be made to locate true ownership. If ownership cannot be determined or the owner refuses to pay expenses of the impounded animals, any proceeds earned will be paid to the inspector and any remaining sum will be given to the estuary fund of the livestock board. If the proceeds are insufficient to cover the inspector's expenses, the deficiency will be paid by the board. Persons shipping the strays are to remit any proceeds from the disposal directly to the board. The board will also have the authority, Mr. Chairman, to have estray or feral livestock processed by means of slaughter. The meat is to be sold to either Wyoming state institutions or to nonprofit organizations. The price of the meat will be the cost of the board's disposal. If the meat is sold to a profit-making business, the amount is to be equal to the market value. In the event that ownership of an estray is determined within 1 year after the animal's disposal, the net amount received from the disposal less $1, which is retained by the board, shall be paid to the owner upon proving ownership. When no ownership is claimed, the proceeds will be disposed of as provided by law. If an animal has damaged private or public property and its disposal has been ordered by the director or state veterinarian, there will be no right to future payment to an owner. The board may seek reimbursement from the owner for all costs associated with the disposal and removal of the feral livestock. Any person who may be entitled to a lien may enforce this by disposing of an animal at public auction upon giving written notice to the owner if they are known. The owner is to be informed of the place and time of the disposal and have at least 5 days prior notice. Notice and the lien holder must post 3 notices of time and place in 3 public places within the county. This is also to be 5 days prior to the disposal. If the owner is not known, these notices are to be posted at least 10 days prior to the disposal. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick overview of the bill, and there is a committee of the whole amendment, and at that time, this time I'd like to have it read in.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Bill 122, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 2.
We move the bill, the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 122 and ask for your considerable consideration. If you'll follow along in your bill, the first portion of the amendment is on page 3, line 2, after inspection, we strike the balance of the line. Page 3, line 3, strike 50 cents per day. And so that would read to be held for not more than 10 days after the inspection to enable him to complete his investigation. And we're talking about the inspector who's doing the brand inspection or attempting to do the brand inspection or find the ownership. The next would be line 5, or page 5, line 15, whereas the old language shows that the impounding fee is not to exceed $5, and that would be changed to $10. And then on page 7, line 10, strike less 1. And then page 7, line 11, strike the entire line. And then on page 7, line 12, strike livestock board, so that that would read, if the lawful owner of the estuary disposed of is found within 1 year after the disposal of the estuary, the net amount received from the sale, from the disposal, shall be. Language was old language in the statute, and really was confusing with what they're trying to do with the changes to this bill. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would call for the question on the amendment.
Was there any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Question being called. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Senator Martin's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 122, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would be glad
the
to answer
the motion
question.
To adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 122 has passed. We're back on the bill, Senator Martin. Go ahead.
I'd be glad to answer any questions if I can.
Okay. Question. Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 122, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Okay. House Bill 122 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 79. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 79, sponsored by Representative Brown, Eminent Domain Wind Power Collector Lines, and Act Relating to Condemnation. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Massey, Nicholas, and Peterson. Noes, Senator C. Meyer, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Larson, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise report it do so with the do pass recommendation on House Bill 79 engrossed. And to explain this bill, I'd like to call once again on Senator Martin.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 79, Eminent Domain Wind Power Collector Line, for consideration. I think probably this is one of the last pieces of legislation on this session that deals with wind energy. Mr. Chairman, in the last interim, the Wind Energy Task Force had limited opportunity to discuss the development of Wyoming's renewable energy infrastructure. I was involved in the development of a report that was submitted to the task force that reflected on the significant challenges wind generation and transmission developers must overcome to achieve this goal. Developers, Mr. Chairman, thus far focused on the interstate transmission solutions and the actual wind development, which are the most fundamental and challenging pieces. A vital infrastructure element that also requires attention is building transmission infrastructure between the wind farms and the major Wyoming transmission line terminals, or in other words, the collector lines. A collection system can take on many shapes and forms, ranging from a radial system to a completely integrated system. The developers of the collector systems must keep a balance between improved reliability and market flexibility and economics so that the collector system does not make Wyoming wind uneconomical. If done in the proper manner, a collector system has the potential to add value to the wind projects. The development of the collector systems infrastructure that transports the electricity from the wind farm to the interstate transmission will be a huge challenge, which comes with its own issues and questions. Some projections suggest that over 1,500 miles or 2,700 acres of land will be required to construct the collector line system wind in southeast Wyoming. Meaning an awful lot of the private lands in Wyoming will be the bullseye for condemnation. Thus, the purpose of House Bill 79, which you will find is defined in Section 2 of the bill on pages 3 and 4, and that states that the legislation will continue the task force on wind energy as it was established by Chapter 159, 2009 Wyoming Session Laws, 2009, House Bill 001, Section 348. It's pages 3, lines 12 through 23 states that the task force shall clearly define collector systems, identify and recommend conditions appropriate for the use of condemnation authority authorized pursuant to Wyoming Statute 126.815 for collector systems for commercial facilities generating electricity from wind. Consider and recommend appropriate policy, a public policy with respect to the severance of the wind estate from the surface estate, and consider and make recommendations regarding the amount, method, and duration of payment to landowners who are subject to the construction and operation of wind energy collector systems on their land. Mr. Chairman, the bill also imposes a one-year moratorium on eminent domain for collector lines by the creation of new subsection D to Wyoming Statute 121-26-815, which you will find on page 2 of the bill. The prohibition imposed by this new subsection D shall be effective immediately and shall end June 30, 2011, or upon the effective date of the legislation establishing additional conditions for the use of condemnation authority for the erection, placement, or expansion of the collector systems associated with commercial facilities generating electricity from wind. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick explanation of the bill. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment, and at this time I would ask that it be read in.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Bill 79, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 6.
Senator Martin. Oops. Oh, Senator Bebop. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 79. Members of the Senate, very simply what this amendment does is we are going to have the Task Force on Wind Energy involved in this process once again. And this amendment does two things. One thing it does is take from 2 to 3 the members from the public at large appointed by the governor. And if you'll recall, in the 2009 budget session, we set up this task force on wind energy. The other members of that task force are 3 members from the Senate, 4 from the House, and of course we had 2 members at large. Now we will be going to 3 members at large. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, this amendment does is it extends the sunset date from December 31st of 09 to December 31st, 2010. I would ask for your support.
Questions on Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Say that I would certainly hope you'd support the bill and support this amendment. What this amendment would do was allow, at the governor's discretion, a member of the landowner community to serve on that task force. And then when we're talking about right-of-way issues, eminent domain, and collector lines, we feel it's very important to include a landowner. So that's the essence of the amendment. I urge your support.
For discussion on the amendment. Question? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Bebop's motion to Senator Martin's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 79, please say aye.
Aye.
Excuse me. Oh, excuse me. Was it Senator Bebop?
Chairman, I believe I
moved. Oh, okay. Sorry. Start over again. All those in favor of Senator Bebop's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment, number 1, to House Bill 79, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Okay. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment, number 1, to House Bill 79, has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Martin. Oops. Question being called?
Question
being called. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 79, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The bill is passed committee of House Bill 79 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 95. Yes, Senator Jennings.
I have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. Chairman, if you look up here in the balcony, you'll see all the kids from Crest Hill Elementary standing up. Stand up. Isn't that a good bunch of good-looking, smart kids from Crest Hill in Casper, Wyoming? Please help me welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate, Crest Hill Elementary. We're now have the reading clerk read House Bill 95.
House Bill 95, sponsored by Representative Yagi, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act 2, an act relating to Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act. It was assigned to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, S. Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Burns, what is your pleasure?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I want to look my best for the kids.
Okay. You all ready?
My hair okay? Yeah, both of them.
A long way to go.
You've just outdone yourself, Senator.
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 95, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act 2. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that it be read in now.
Reading clerk, read the amendment.
House Bill 95, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 7, line 16.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that for further explanation of the bill that you call on the good senator who just introduced the cute kids from Natrona County.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there's also a Committee of the Whole amendment. Could I have that read in at this time?
The clerk, reading clerk, please read this.
House Bill 95, Committee of the Whole Amendment, number 1 to corrected copy, page 7, lines 14, 15.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd like to move Standing Committee Amendment number 1, and I'd also like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. And, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'll pick those amendments up when we get to them in the bill. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, what we have here today is a very large economic development bill. Really? of course, Mr. Chairman, it has about as much to do with economic development as horse racing. Mm. But what I'd like to... What I would like to point out, Mr. Chairman, is that this is a bill that's making a statement to the federal government. And what we've done with this bill is we've gone in and we've looked at the different areas of where the federal government has stepped up and regulated guns and ammunition. And what this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is it gives Wyoming citizens the authority to manufacture firearms and ammunition. And it stays in Wyoming, and it's controlled by Wyoming and not the federal government. And there's a page that looks a lot like this that should have been passed around probably Friday afternoon before we all left. And it kind of gives you a rundown of what we're looking at in this bill. And it just roughly, I'll remind you what it's on there, especially if you don't have the page. It talks about the materials that will be used for the guns and the ammunition. It talks about... personal firearms and firearm accessories, ammunition that is manufactured commercially or privately in Wyoming and stays in Wyoming is not subject under the federal laws. It also says that all of these firearms will be clearly stamped with made in Wyoming, and therefore they're easier to identify. There's also some sections creating some penalties. It also talks about the Attorney General may defend a citizen of Wyoming. The Second Amendment to the United States Constitution reserves the right to keep and bear arms, as does the Wyoming Constitution. And, Mr. Chairman, as you go down through this list, you'll see that mainly what we're looking at here is our rights as citizens of Wyoming to be able to manufacture firearms under Wyoming and not under the federal government. As we go through the bill, Mr. Chairman, as you notice on page 1, you know, it talks about what it is and what we're trying to do. But at the bottom of page 2, line 22, you'll see that there's a definition of the firearm and weapon. And later in the repealer, the reason that the repealer is there is because we changed the definition just a touch from what's in statute. So when we get to the back of the bill and the repealer, that's why we repealed it. As we go in on page 4, we talk about a personal firearm and firearm accessories or ammunition that's manufactured commercially or privately in Wyoming, and then how it and what it affects on the federal law and interstate commerce. As you go down, continue on page 4, we talk about the generic and insignificant parts that are under the manufacturing, and then we talk about the different feedstocks that would come in and how they're not, they won't be considered a firearm until they're put into one. Then on page 5, line 20, a firearm manufactured or sold in Wyoming under this act shall have the words made in Wyoming clearly stamped on it. And that way you don't get mixed up with any of the other guns. It's stamped made in Wyoming, which kind of is a neat stamp if you think about it. We go through and on page 6, you know, we talk about to possess a firearm covered by this section, a person shall. So here's all your permission clauses. A person shall not have been convicted of a felony in any state, territory, or other jurisdiction in the United States. A person shall not currently be adjudicated to be legally incompetent. A person shall not have been committed to a mental institution. A person shall not purchase a firearm covered under this section, or to purchase a firearm under this section, a person shall be at least 21 years old for a firearm or a handgun, or a firearm that is a handgun, 18 years old for a firearm that is a shotgun or a rifle. And again, not convicted of a felony in any state, territory, or jurisdiction, not currently be adjudicated to be illegally incompetent, and not to have been committed to a mental institution. Mr. Chairman, that brings us to the area where the Standing Committee Amendment is, and that is on page 7, line 16. And we had a discussion in committee brought to us by law enforcement. And if you look in there, it says, any public service of the state of Wyoming as defined by the statute who enforces or attempts to enforce any act, order, law, statute, rule, or regulation of the United States government relating to a personal firearm, etc. And what we decided in that is that if the federal government came to Wyoming and ordered some of our law enforcement folks to go with them to look or confiscate made in Wyoming firearms, that we kind of had a problem with that. And so what we did with the amendment, to Mr. Chairman, is we struck the word order. So we're telling our public servants not to do this, but we took away the order. So if they do get an order from the federal government, then that takes their responsibility or liability away. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the Standing Committee Amendment, and if there's no questions about it, I call for the question.
Discussion on the amendment. Okay, questions have been called for. All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment of the whole number 1 to House Bill 79, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Okay. The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment of the whole number 1 to House Bill 79 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the...
You are right. Should you want me to read that in again then to be sure? The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 95 was passed. Thank you. Jeez, I'm getting confused. Must be getting tired today. Would you go, Senator? Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Back on the bill.
That's proof that at least two guys are listening. Mr. Chairman, at this time I would like to address the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. It's in the same area. And what we did here is that we changed it to read just a little bit different. We changed it to say no public servant as defined in statute or dealer selling any firearm in the state shall enforce or attempt to enforce. And then we went on to the rest of the description until we got down on page 7, line 20. And then we put a period after Wyoming and struck the rest of the page. Mr. Chairman, what we're doing here is we're saying the folks in Wyoming, we're just going to tell you, don't do this. And we think that the folks in Wyoming are smart enough to obey Wyoming statute and don't do it. We had some questions from law enforcement about imposing a fine or a penalty on law enforcement servants if they went forward with this. So we just changed this to say, folks, don't do it. And if they continue to do, if they do do it, and we have to come back at a later date and put a fine on it, we'll do that. But I think that the everybody in Wyoming, law enforcement dealers, are smart enough to read the law and just say they refuse to register a gun or ammo on the federal on federal statutes if it's marked with made in Wyoming. So, Mr. Chairman, ask the committee of the whole amendment, and I'd stand for questions. If there's no questions, I call for the question.
Discussion on the amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 95, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 95 has passed. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we go back through the rest of the bill, you notice what we're telling the people of Wyoming and the federal government. We go through page 8 and 9. We go. We talk about the our rights and guarantees under the 10th Amendment, the 9th Amendment. Interstate commerce is over on page 10. The Second Amendment rights. Then on page 10 at the bottom, the section of the Wyoming Constitution that guarantees of our right to for arms. And as we go through, we talk about all the rights that we have. Most all of us have been there and read those. So I'd like to, as we go back through, come back to page 13, point out a couple of things here. We have under page 13, line 11, what we're talking about here, ladies and gentlemen, is that it says, except as authorized under Wyoming Statute 15-1-103A8, no city or county is... no city, town, or county, political subdivision, or any other entity shall. And what you go, we do is go back to existing statute. We they had added political subdivision in there, and that just that covers the cities and the counties. And basically, what that piece of statute says is that the cities and counties can cover anything that becomes a disturbance or a safety or health matter. Then they can say, "Don't use your guns over here," and that's. And like I say, that's current statute. All that was really added was the political subdivisions, and then down below, the accessories and components. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill in a quick summary. It's a good bill. When we look at having 100 to 150,000 gun owners in the state, it really is not going to be a boon to manufacturing or anything like that. But there will be some firearms made in Wyoming. There might be some ammo made in Wyoming. But what it really does say is that the control of the guns manufactured within our borders belong to us. And that's basic it, plain and simple. I'd stand for any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question with regard to some of the definitions and some of the language used. If you look at page 4, line 5, the lead-in is a personal firearm. Yet, further in the bill, typically I see just firearm used, and firearm and not personal firearm is the defined term. And my question is, what's the significance of the language on page 4 of a personal firearm, given the other language in the bill, and the definition of firearm? Mr. Chairman, my second question is, firearm means any weapon which is or designed to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive. Mr. Chairman, as I read that, that includes automatic firearms, as they do that. It includes cannon, because that's a pretty good description of a cannon. And I'm not being facetious here. I have been extremely impressed by what our machine shops can turn out from some very basic raw materials if they want to. So you might be surprised at what could be manufactured. I'm not clear whether it includes, I think it may, device designed to shoot a rocket-propelled grenade or other rocket aimed at penetrating armor. What I'm wondering about is, do we need to tighten this definition up so that we're talking about the kind of things that most of us think of as personal firearms? You know, rifles, shotguns, maybe pistols, maybe even that, I guess they call it a Kazool 454. I describe it as a hand cannon that Freedom Arms manufactures. Tighten it up so we're dealing with those things and not larger weapons of war. I'd like some discussion as to what the true implications of the definitions and the way the terms are used in this act.
Oh, Senator Sessions.
I just, sitting here looking at this, I have a question, too, along the same line as the tall senator from Natrona County, is what about armor-piercing bullets, that kind of a stuff? Is that a possibility that those can be manufactured in this state?
Senator Honeycutt.
I have a question as well on the definition on page 2. Do we always have to include a weapon? Is target practicing considered defensive or something? Seems weapons seem to be a word of defense. And that firearm, based on what it says in that definition, you could own a cannon. So I'm just kind of, and it doesn't really clear it up as you go through here. It still says personal firearm. Well, you just roll your cannon around and go for it.
Senator Jennings, put your cannon on.
We probably should have addressed this question on cannons a long time ago, because we already have that happening in the state of Wyoming. There's quite a club that meets up by Gillette, and if you haven't gone watch them shoot off their cannons, then you're definitely missing a treat. And when they can aim those cannons and hit little circles and balloons and stuff on a mountainside over there, it's impressive. So we're already there. We already have cannons being built. We have guys going out in competition and playing with them. So if we need to address that, that really is something that we should address or should have addressed many years ago, because it's going out there having fun. As far as the ammunition, got me on that one, my tall friend from Natrona County and from Laramie County. As far as I read in this right now, and not going back and finding it in other statutes, which I would hope that would be there, and I will go look this evening and see if I can find those, probably can, unless it's covered in a statute someplace else, but we'll go look.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regard to the bill, I was asked from a leadership view in regard to how these bills would be treated. My comment was, when they got to the Senate, that they would receive a considerable amount of scrutiny. And I think that's what's occurring right now. I think that's appropriate, and I think that's proper. And I think would hope that we could continue this method of scrutiny in the future readings and perhaps clear this bill up. If not, we'll take the appropriate action. But I appreciate these questions, particularly in regard to the definitions. It's obvious that this needs to be scrutinized further. I'd hope we could do it in a future reading. Thank you.
Further discussion on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 95, say aye. Those opposed, say no. The bill has passed the committee. House Bill 95 passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration. Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor for a moment?
You may.
Fellow senators, right now in Casper, Rich Cuban's funeral has been going on for about 20 minutes. Just wanted you to know that.
Thank you for reminding Senator Jennings. And next bill for our consideration is House Bill 34. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 34, sponsored by Representative Edmonds, referendum on adopted ordinance petition and act relating to municipal elections.
Senator Case, what is your pleasure?
He's not done reading, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, sorry.
It was assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections Political Subdivision, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson. Excuse, Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Now, Senator Case, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 34, referendum on adopted ordinance petitions. Mr. Chairman, this was referred to the Corporations Committee. I don't believe that there's a Senate sponsor, so unless there is, I'll just go ahead and talk about it. What it has to do with how long the public has to have a referendum to overthrow a action of their city council. It takes the number of days allowed from 10 days to 20 days. As I think you might recall, there was a fairly prominent local ordinance issue that happened in our great city of Cheyenne in a little earlier in the year. And folks tried to overturn that ordinance. They had 10 days to do it. They found that that was a very huge obstacle to getting the significant number of signatures to do that in a large community like Cheyenne, and perhaps Casper is probably not as bad in smaller towns. But so this just takes the number of days and raises it from 10 to 20. That's the entirety of the bill. It's a nice white bill, Mr. Chairman. We always like to see those white bills once in a while.
Discussion on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 34, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. House Bill 34 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 44.
House Bill 44, sponsored by Representative Illaway, taxation of property used for economic development and act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Larson, Martin, and Schiffer. No, Senator Case and Senator Perkins. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Schiffer, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report.
Yeah.
You do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 44, taxation of property used for economic development. And to explain this good little bill, I'll yield to Senator Larson.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, for this good little bill, I would yield to Senator Honeycutt.
Senator Honeycutt, passing it right along.
The lowest man on the totem pole. Here we go.
Question on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, before we get started on this, there's a handout that was handed out last week. It's probably at the bottom of your pile by now, but it's colored in blue. And it kind of talks a little bit about the business-ready communities, business parks and buildings, and the amount of readiness grants versus the amount of private investment, the business development activities, and some of the jobs. It just kind of gives you a feel for what these communities are invested in their economic development parks. This bill is very similar to the bill we had last week, House Bill 70, in terms of the county assessors having to now assess the property in a development, a large development, divided up in several lots. All the lots have to be assessed at the highest value of a lot that was in that development. So if somebody built a building, or if they built a building and the assessor came through all the developed lots, even though they don't have buildings or anything on them and they're still just prairie, are assessed at that same rate. In this case, it's the local economic development groups that get hit the hardest. These are nonprofit groups. A lot of times the land is given away or sold at a discount, and they just kind of live on a tight budget.
when they are taxed like this, they are taxed just like a large developer who has other revenues or is selling his at a profit. These people are enticing. This is back to that little bit of a priming the pump. They can't afford to be taxed at the full rate on a full development. Lost my train of thought. Because of the amount of land that might be involved, you're talking hundreds of acres. We had a private developer come in, and he talked about the same situation in terms of the large development and having vacant lots that may sit around for several years for a private developer who really can't afford that either. But in a local economic development group, land sitting around being taxed at a high rate will just bankrupt these nonprofit groups. In many cases, these economic development areas, like here in Cheyenne, are probably 200 or 300 acres. And if you put streets and sewer and water in those streets for a couple hundred acres, it gets pretty pricey. In 2007, that's when that ruling was stated that the community development organizations had to pay taxes on this developed land for public benefit. Starting that the law was unclear, stating that the law was unclear and that it should be remedied through legislative action. We passed a bill last year, or 2 years ago, I guess it was, passed the House anyway last year, 50-10. This bill would have the property tax reduction as an incentive for development until the land or the buildings are leased or sold. House Bill 70 talked just about the land and the water and sewer and streets. This one includes buildings. Some economic development groups will end up with a building, and to be able to have to pay taxes on that building as though it was at the current value could totally bankrupt them. This is all going to be recovered. I shouldn't say recovered, but the full assessment on the property will kick in as soon as the building or the land is leased or sold. And then the businesses will start paying the full amount as they are assessed. In Cheyenne, we gave away quite a bit of land at one time. And by doing so, we got EchoStar, Sierra Trading Post, Lowe's Distribution, Walmart, Trustcraft, and several other smaller companies who are now paying tremendous amounts of property tax on that developed land. They're paying wages, and the wages are being used throughout the community. And there is an amendment that was put in by Senator Schiffer. Will you move that one yourself, or do you want me to do it? Okay. Why don't we go ahead and read that in, and then I'll kind of go through the bill real quick.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Bill 44, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 5.
Okay, let's go through the bill real quickly.
Would you move that amendment, please?
So moved.
Okay, thank you.
Page 1 is just kind of a brief description, just introduction. Page 2 is kind of the meat of the whole thing. Any improvements in land and amenities, including but not limited to streets, curbs, gutters, utilities, sewer, water, infrastructure that may contribute to the value of the land or real property owned by a community development organization. This building has got to be owned by this organization. As I said, this exemption shall cease to apply to improvements in land and amenities on real property from and after the date that the real property is sold or leased by the community development organization. And then there's the definition of community development organization. I don't think I need to go through that. We're all pretty familiar with it. Page 2, line 5. After organization, we will insert the amount of the exemption shall be reported by the county assessor on the abstract submitted to the State Board of Equalization as prescribed by Wyoming Statutes 39, etc. I think it's important that maybe we know how this is working and how much sales or property tax is being deferred for future reference. This is a favorable amendment. I don't think anybody has had any problems with it. I haven't heard from anybody having a problem with that. On bottom of page 2, we talk about an organization has no private stock and does not distribute profit to its owners or members. So this has to be a nonprofit group with no stock involved. And I think the issue came up when the newspaper in Cheyenne said that several members of Leeds, or of the local economic development group, had bought some of the land from the industrial park and had made a profit on it. And in the committee, it was described, and I've talked with others, that in this case, the local economic development group could not afford the whole parcel of 600 and some acres. So they decided to sell off several of the corners that they figured that they could not use to help provide the down payment.
Senator Honeycutter, are you still on the amendment?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm just rambling on.
We need to have... Okay, question. Okay. Question being called on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Honeycutt's motion to adopt the standing amendment number 1 to House Bill 44, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The motion to adopt standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 44 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Okay. In just a second, I'll yield the floor to Senator Larson, because I know he had the question about the bottom of page 2.
Okay.
Just real quickly, page 3, you can all read that. The organization must utilize real property, attract new businesses to the community for purpose of creating new jobs, capital investment, and economic development. And with that, I would move that the favorable consideration for this bill as well.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move a committee to hold amendment number 1 and ask that it be read in.
The reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Bill 44, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 24.
Senator Larson.
Number 1, if I didn't. And
he moved it.
To explain the amendment, I'd like to go in. It comes in at the bottom of page 2 where it says the organization has no private stock and does not distribute private stock to its owners or members, and Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, I thought that was insufficient, and so I've added this amendment, which, for all effect, after that says, each of the organization's officers, directors, and employees has agreed in writing that proprietary information, confidential information, and any other information which has not been publicly released shall not be used in any way for business, personal, or family gain. Mr. Chairman, I think that clarifies that problem that was at least perceived and reported in the paper to have arisen with these kinds of companies. And so I would be happy to stand for questions and ask for favorable consideration of the amendment.
Questions on the amendment? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a great amendment. I really do. It just seems odd to put it in the I realize you don't have any other place to put it, but we're putting it in the Title 39 tax statute. So obviously you can't bring anything else in the bill, but I wonder if there's other law in other places covering these types of organizations, and I'm not aware.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I believe there is, but I don't know how to get to it with this at this time, and so as it applies to this, I brought it in here, but I think it may be an excellent amendment to bring into some other sections of the law, as was indicated from the good senator from Fremont County.
Discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 44, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 95 has passed. We're now back on the bill. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm not real excited about this bill. I was a no vote in committee. I have this issue with treating a nonprofit different than we treat a for-profit developer in the same circumstance. We're extending a tax break to something because it's nonprofit, because they're apparently needy. I assure you that I'm not sure there's any basis for that, Mr. Chairman. Why should government have an advantage in development compared to a private developer? Now, there will be private developers that will come and testify in favor of this because they are either have the land next door or they benefit by some of the infrastructure that might be put in. fair enough. I don't blame them. But as a general policy, is it a good idea to have the nonprofit sector receive a tax break for doing things that other people do without the tax break on a basic, fundamental, competitive basis? Mr. Chairman, we did have a bill that came through here on Friday, and that was House Bill 70. And what that dealt with was vacant land. And that, remember that bill, and I won't dwell too much on it, but it was a good example, Mr. Chairman, where the same benefits of having a tax reduction, literally, because the market value is reduced because you've got such a large amount of land for sale that's been platted and developed. That applied equally to for-profit developers and to these type of nonprofit economic development groups. That makes a lot of sense, and that was based on the Constitution, and it was based on a market value arrangement. This one singles out folks that may compete with other people in the private sector and gives them an advantage of a tax break. But yet we have the other bill that we just passed, that and I assume that it'll meet with success going through the legislature, that solves the problem on an equal footing. We really don't need this bill here, and the other bill is much better vehicle for extending, the true market value-based taxes, which yields them a break, both to the nonprofit sector and to the profit sector. This bill is special treatment for people that will compete with other folks. How would you feel if you had a retail business and your local economic development group were to develop a piece of property and then allow a competing business to come into that piece of property, maybe because they didn't have to pay some of the taxes, they had an advantage and could grant a lower price. Maybe they got a loan from the business council, and maybe they developed the lot and put in the utilities and things with loan from the business council. You know, that doesn't feel very good when you're on the other end of that, and it's not fair. And it's a case where government kind of gets its priorities screwed up, Mr. Chairman, and doesn't pay attention to the fact that what the private sector does is important and that we shouldn't tilt those playing fields and change things. Now, the testimony in committee is that this economic development group is very responsible. They look very much at creating jobs, and that the things, kind of things they do probably don't compete with other folks. No one else is developing a very large distribution center privately. At least I don't know of that in Cheyenne. But these economic development groups exist in every small town in Wyoming, and they're doing all sorts of things, from fast food to hotels to restaurants to office parks. And they will be able to apply the same thing and compete with private developers. I don't think that's right, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Johnson. Find you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really don't like them to be called government organizations. They're community development organizations. The local one here, my wife and I pay our annual dues to it. And when they were collecting money to buy the land out west to try to attract more industries, we made our donations to it. So it's definitely not government. It's a community development organization with its own board of directors and everything else. I think this is a very great bill, and if things go the way they are, ours will probably go out of business because of the property taxes that are put on the empty land as it waits to be sold for development. So please do vote for House Bill 44.
Discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
I think the good senator makes an excellent point, and I may have referred to them as a government organization, and they are a nonprofit organization, and I do stand corrected. But I would like to point out that they enjoy the benefits of government money, including this tax subsidy. Many of them are eligible for grants. Some are directly funded by their county government. We had testimony in committee where that was, in fact, true. I don't know how it is at your hometown or you're in your county, but chances are there is taxpayer money involved, and to me that kind of walks it slightly down towards the issue of government. But I do stand corrected. On the issue of vacant land, Mr. Chairman, that's what House Bill 70 does. It's perfect, and it applies to the goose and the gander. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 44. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say no. House Bill 44 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 15.
House Bill 15, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Revisions, and Act Relating to Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Case, what is your pleasure? I think you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 15, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Revisions. This was an interim topic of your Corporations Committee, Mr. Chairman. As you recall, there was a management audit of the Office of the Fire Marshal last year. This is in part to respond to the issues around that audit. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to walk you through the bill, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what this bill does is to clarify some of the duties of the fire marshal. In a lot of ways, it separates out the role of the board from the actual office itself, the Electrical Safety Board, Mr. Chairman. So you'll see lots of places where those functions are separated because they were sort of unduly mixed before, Chairman, and it worked out that the board did not have the ability, because they were involved in all the decisions, they didn't have the ability to act as really the appeal board or to be an independent licensing entity, Mr. Chairman. As you'll see that there's some dates that are changed in there. Let's just start on first page 2 of the bill. This is a new section, 35.9.131. This gives the state's fire marshal's agency the authority to investigate electrocutions. And this whole section was the subject of another bill last year, but it was brought into this bill during our interim because it seemed appropriate, Mr. Chairman. And it deals with the very tragic circumstances where a very young child was electrocuted in this county, Mr. Chairman, in a very tragic accident, and it was found that there was no jurisdictional ability to investigate that death. This provides the State Fire Marshal's Office with that ability. Mr. Chairman, if you go on to page 5, these are kind of the meat of the bill. There's some changes in definitions here, Mr. Chairman, as to whether the board or the department promulgates these rules about whether you're an apprentice or a master and how that works. And you can see that the date changes. That's just that date change on line 12, there's no need to have a reference to a March 1st, 1994 date anymore. And you can see the only change on line 17 is to take it from the board to the department. If you turn the page, you're going to see another similar thing on line 7, and that's for the issue of apprentice technicians. 35.9.103. This has to do with the organization of the board. We establish a vice chairman on line 24. Under 35.9.106 on page 7, Mr. Chairman, what we've done is brought in the international existing building code. And you notice we chose the word existing building code so that it can evolve. Language on 16 through 20 more specifies the duties of the electrical council. And then finally at the bottom we get into 35.9.107, duties and powers of the state fire marshal. As you can see, they're allowed to consult with the board and adopt regulations to implement these articles. As we keep going down, we clear up information about whether it's the department's responsibility or the board, or sometimes referred to as the council. 359108 has to do with plan review. That's on the bottom of page 8. And how they go through the nuts and bolts of when they discover deficiencies in a plan review which would lead to a code violation, and how they can get that plan amended without having to start over and bring it into compliance with the applicable building codes. And you can see, again, changing council to department on line 9 on page 9. And now we're talking about line 14 and 15. Instead of just having one definitive plan review, we're going to allow them to make a change to amend it to get after those code issues, Mr. Chairman. And that's a good flexible thing for people having these so they don't have to start over. Mr. Chairman, there's some fees on page 10. And you can. This is a consumer-friendly thing that says, in the old days, it said if you had $25,000 or more, you had to go through this elaborate plan review. That's being raised to $40,000 or more. So, Mr. Chairman, you can't hardly build anything for $25,000. That's granite countertops at a kitchen remodel these days, Mr. Chairman. And you can see that same $40,000 is for the remodeling issues. And 19 through the top of the next page, that's lines page 10 and 11, this allows a plan review to be submitted in stages, which they didn't have this ability to do before. So if you have a very big project, you need to get started, they can take bite-sized pieces of it to get going. This will be very effective for our public building efforts, Mr. Chairman. 359119, duties of the chief electrical inspector. This, again, relates to the electrocution incidents. It's a different part of the statute, but it ties into that ability that's with the fire marshal. It allows, upon receipt of a court order, to restrict and suspend a license. 359120 are the minimum requirements. These are some of the things about installation requirements, Mr. Chairman. And you can see the new language on page 12, lines 4 through 10, to the extent that any provision in the International Fire Code, the International Building Code, the International Mechanical Code, and the International Existing Building Code, conflicts with the standards provided by the National Electric Code, the National Electric Code shall be prevailing in this instance. That clears up some jurisdictional issues there, Mr. Chairman. Then we get to the bottom, and as you can see in paragraph C, once again, it's moving from the board to the department. But then you can see that the fees for electrical wiring permit fees are being raised from $30 to $50. Actually, electrical contractors asked for that fee increase, so that the department could have more money to operate on, Mr. Chairman, and that fee hadn't been raised since about the late 1970s, as I understand it. The only thing on page 13 is just it's the department. I don't think we need the language of fire prevention electrical safety there, Mr. Chairman. On page 14, this is the disposition of the fees. As you can see, it used to be 50-50. Going to the general fund and to the agency. This changes that disposition from to 60-40. The agency gets 60%, the general fund gets 40%. The Appropriations Committee took a look at that. They may want to speak to it. They did not make any changes in that area. I think they weren't entirely happy that this was coming through in a bill like this, but they hadn't seen it in the previous budget process. But in the end, it's not a lot of money. It's about $50,000, and the testimony was that I think they were persuaded that it wasn't that big of a deal, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the rest is still just changing names and moving from the council to the department for some particular responsibilities. And then 16 is a lot of new language. Mr. Chairman, on page 16, we're specifying which code is being is happening, and this is where they're asked to provide building code enforcement, and it shall be basically it's when a municipality notifies the department to come in and provide this enforcement. This is the standards by which that happens, Mr. Chairman. That new language continues over to page 17. On the bottom of page 17, section D, this is where it becomes very clear now that the board acts as an appellate agency for decisions of the department, and you can see how that's prescribed. Mr. Chairman, we go on to page 18. It talks about the ability to appeal these decisions to the district court. That wasn't there before. And how appeals proceed under Section F. Mr. Chairman, in 35.9.121, that's health care facilities. Page 18 and 19, you can see some language is being removed. And a key word is on page 19, line 7, where it says a municipality or a county which has enforcement authority under this subsection may create its own appeals board to determine the suitability of alternative materials and types of construction. This says that they shall do that, Mr. Chairman. And so it requires that appeals on these local health care issues be pursued locally. Mr. Chairman, 35.9.123, electrical installations to be performed by licensed electricians or licensed personnel. You can see that there's a reference to home rule on page 20. The word home rule is taken out and local enforcement authority is put in. And then we get to 35.9.124, powers and duties of the board. And this covers appeals and other things. And you can see we're just changing the code from rules and regulations of the council to the National Electric Code. That's their appeal basis. And then it talks about the board's ability to suspend a license for repeated or serious violations. And it defines what a serious violation is. That's a violation that has a risk of injury or death. And they do have enforcement authority of up to $2,500. And they define a repeat violation as within 2 years, Mr. Chairman. It also gets on page 21, lines 13 through 16, the board is granted reciprocal ability to approve licensing agreements with other states so that we can allow electricians and other technicians licensed in other states to work in Wyoming. Then we get into 35.9.125. This is the issue of low voltage, Mr. Chairman. Basically, we're clearing up the name here again. It's not it's the Board of Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety, but it's the State Fire Marshal's Department. So, and Mr. Chairman, that's the same thing all on through page 22 and again on 23. 35.9.126 on page 24. This is the licensing of different types. And you can see, once again, it's a shift from the board to the department. Same on page 25, from the board to the department. And same thing on page 26 and all the way to through 27. And we get, and including 28, Mr. Chairman. It's all shifting from the board to the department. And 35.9.129, once again, there's the very last page. There's a shift from the responsibilities from the board to the department. But there's also this repeat of the disposition of the fees from this section. Once again, Mr. Chairman, according to the same split that we had before. That's the entirety of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions. There is a committee of the whole amendment when you get around to it.
Ms. Senator Kaser, also standing committee amendment.
Right, Mr. Chairman. I would ask for that to be read in at this time.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Bill 15, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 4, line 22.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 15. And, Mr. Chairman, what this does is goes into page 20 after line 12, and page 20 is the section 35.9.124, and that's on the licensing area, Mr. Chairman. Let me get right to that. That's the powers of the board, Mr. Chairman. It specifies very clearly that the board has the ability to establish minimum standards for training requirements for all classes of electricians, licensing requirements for all classes of electricians, and reciprocal license for any journeyman, electrician, master electrician, low voltage technical, or limited technician license, Mr. Chairman. Those reciprocal licenses are the ones that are issued by other states. That's the entirety of the amendment. It's more clear about the powers of the board in this area, Mr. Chairman. I stand for questions.
Questions on the amendment? Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 15, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Okay. The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Hospital 15 is passed. We're now back on the bill. Senator Bebaugh.
Chairman, just a question for my colleague from Fremont County. Under Local Enforcement 359121, excuse me, on page 14 and then on to 15, it talks about requirements of inspectors. And if you look on page 16, starting in line 12 and going through 17, it's just hard to track that because we talk about or all the way through, then we say and, then we say or again. And maybe we could talk about some clarification language at that. I had trouble figuring out what it really means.
Senator Case.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think probably the best person to answer this is sitting in the chair of this body right now, probably, Mr. Chairman, with your past professional electrical experience. But, Mr. Chairman, not all counties have, and cities, local jurisdictions, exercise the authority over electrical inspections, Mr. Chairman. That's the way I understand it. And this language has all these qualifiers as to whether or not the local jurisdiction has that enforcement authority. And I think the good senator is right. It probably doesn't read as clear as it probably should. But as you can see, it's the same structure in each section. It says, if code enforcement authority for fire and building codes is requested, meaning the state comes in and the certification of the fire inspector or building inspector by the International Code or the International Conference of Building Officials is required for any inspector employed or contracted after July 1, 2010. What this is a grandfather clause that, in essence, allows inspectors to have a certain level of expertise right now, but after July 1, 2010, any new inspectors will have to meet a higher level of standard. And I believe that's actually, Mr. Chairman, if I remember right, it's a journeyman level of electrician standard. You see that lines 4 through 10 deal with the fire and building code. Lines 12 through 17 deal with the electrical code. And lines 19... Well, 19 through 24 is a different issue. It has to do with whether or not the inspector has the necessary certification. So I think that's why there's ors up above and below. But, you know, I'll sit down with the good senator. We'll go through this with a fine-tooth comb, and you can bet we'll have all our wires connected to the right places.
Okay.
There is a committee of the whole amendment, Mr. Chairman, if there's no further discussion.
Would you like that read in?
I would.
Thank you. With reading clerk, read the amendment.
House Bill 15, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 2.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 15. Mr. Chairman, this is about a little excitement here, Mr. Chairman. We had another bill on this floor that met and perhaps a deserved demise, and that was... I believe it was House Bill 10, and it had to do with licensing requirements. What this bill does is go into the same area of House Bill 10, but attack the problem in a different way. As you recall, House Bill 10, and with leeway, Mr. Chairman, because it is the subject of this amendment, House Bill 10, what it did was get rid of an exemption for cable television. And... this Senate decided they didn't like that idea. Well, what this amendment does is leaves the exemption for cable television, and you can see on lines 22 through 28 of the amendment, grants the exemption to everybody else. Okay, so that all of these parties have the exemption. Add satellite TV and telecommunications to the list of exempted persons to put them in on equal footing with cable television. So it's the exact opposite of what we did in the Senate on House Bill 10. Instead of licensing everybody, we're going to exempt everybody. And recall that these are companies that have training programs. I mean, these are big, big operators here, Mr. Chairman. All right. There was another section in House Bill 10 that's important we try to preserve, and that's the issue for people that install lawn sprinkler systems. By our actions on House Bill 10, we actually made them have to come in and get a license. And that's not necessarily a good deal. And they're just working with low voltage, those little valves and the timer control box and all that stuff. So what this does is exempt them from licensure. But I think there was confusion. This is the same thing as what House Bill 10, but I believe we were confused that day. It's never happened before, but I think that was just one day, Mr. Chairman. They still have to follow the building code. Everybody has to follow the building code. But they don't have to be licensed, and this preserves that. If people don't like this concept, this amendment is divisible. You could do the low voltage separate from the other exemptions, but that's what this amendment does. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions on the amendment? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Discussion on the amendment. Excuse me, Vice President. Senator Ross.
Chairman. Well, members of the body, I think we need to take a hard look at what we're doing here. At first, I thought it was a fairly innocuous bill until all of a sudden we hear about amendments coming down the pike, and all of a sudden my emails are full primarily from electricians saying we don't want to expand these exemptions. Now, that may be turf protection. I don't know. But they have raised some valid issues about handcuffing the state fire marshal's office and their ability to police the quality of electrical installations. And primarily what they're concerned about is the breaching of firewalls by untrained personnel who do not know the danger that this could pose later. So work your will as you might on this, but I think that this amendment actually is controversial, or more controversial than we suspect.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Sessions.
Some of the other controversy that we've been receiving emails over is the fact of the type of cable that will be used if we put all these exemptions on. And there are evidently cheaper products out there that are not as safe in your home, and there is a concern over that. And then I guess that this is what they're seeing already is out-of-state workers that are coming in working on weekends and at night to avoid the fire marshal. Now they're afraid that it'll just be wide open. So I guess there are some things we ought to think about and talk about.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, the only part of this amendment that really makes me comfortable is the one about maintenance of lawn sprinkler systems. So what I would suggest is we kill this amendment and then on second or third reading just bring an amendment in for that and be very careful about the rest of it.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment, it does seem to me that this gets rid of the objectionable features in the preceding bill that was mentioned. And basically, these people are doing the same thing as the cable people are doing under the exemption that's in the statute now that were preserved. It puts them on an equal playing field so that you have a competitive situation between the two ways to get your satellite, and it does seem to me that we have not had any problems that I've heard of with the existing exemption, so I think it's a sensible way to go to reduce the costs for the people in Wyoming by reducing the Turf Protect regulatory burdens on our commercial activity.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask that we divide the amendment. I think we can do that. 3 through 43 and then 44 and 45 would be separate. I think we can do that.
Looks divisible to me, Senator Bebout. Which one would you like to address first? Division 1 or Division 2? Oh, sorry. Okay, so that would be part of Division 2 then. Would that be part of Vision 2? Is that okay with you, Senator Bebop? Okay. Would you like to? Oh, the division, Division 1 then would be lines 10 through line 43. That's Division 1. Division 2 would be lines 44 and 45. Does that sound correct to you? Okay, Senator Bebop, would you like to discuss Division 1 or ask? Yes. Three through ten. And lines 30 through 45. Okay, let's see if we got that right then. Division 1 then would be lines 11 through 29. And Division 2 would be through 45. Okay.
I think you're calling it Division 1 about the installation, repair, maintenance of lawn sprinklers, and I think that's fine. I think that's something that that other bill we had it in there, and that wasn't a controversial thing.
Division 2. That's correct, Senator Bebop. Division 1 is the other piece of it. Division 2 is the lawn sprinkler piece. So, Senator Case, would you like to? Okay, Senator Burns?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Through the section of, you know, which is part one and which is part two again?
Okay. Let's go. Division one would be lines 11 through 29. Okay. Division two would be lines 3 through 10 and all lines 3 through 5. You got that? Okay. Now, is there anyone with Division one? Okay, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I have a hard time picturing anything really, frankly, wrong with Division 1. You're talking about, as I understand it, cable TV, satellite TV, telecommunications, and so forth, and you go to your local stereo store or something like that, that stuff, frankly, has gotten more complicated than I can hook up. And when they bring it out, they hook it up. They hook it up to my stereo system. They do all this. Now, if you don't put this in, as I understand it, they will have to have an electrical license. And so I think there is a turf issue here.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, was an interim joint bill with meetings working from all sides. And then the committee meeting a few days ago when we considered this, and voted on it to come out on the floor. And it was a good bill, and all of the players agreed on that good bill. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, on general file, without much ado, here comes this, what I consider a major amendment, trying to bring in a bill that didn't happen from previous years. So I would say if Division Number 1 is to be considered for being in the statutes, it ought to be on its own and come back like it was before rather than bringing it in at this late date.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would speak in favor of Division 1. Folks, that's the low voltage part. To take out lawn sprinklers only, which is also low voltage, I don't think makes any sense. So leave that in, leave the other part in when we get to it. But it's low voltage. It's low voltage. It's your cable guy, your satellite guy, who are doing all the low voltage stuff. To be honest, this is a fencing bill. We've all been there. We know what it is. Actually, I think the other bill that was discussed on the floor was also the same thing. So vote aye on Division 1, and then when we get to the lawn sprinklers on Division 2, vote aye also, and let's get this dog handled once and for all.
Yeah, okay. All right, question being called on Division 1. Okay. All those in favor of whose motion was that anyway? Senator Bebop's motion to adopt the what the heck are we on? The committee of the whole division, number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Wow. The ayes have it on that one. So the motion to adopt standing committee division number one to House Bill 15 has passed. Division two, question on division two. Okay. All those in favor of Senator Bebot's motion to adopt the committee of the whole division number two to House Bill 15, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion has motion to adopt the committee of the whole amendment to House Bill 15 is passed. Division. Question on the bill. Okay. All right. All right. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee whole rises to report that do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 15, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Okay. The House Bill 15 is passed committee whole. Majority floor leader Anderson.
With that, I would move that the Senate be at ease for about 10 minutes.
All those heard the motion, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
If they say no.
No.
Yeah. Here, I got this piece. Yeah, it's hot up here. You know what? It's hot up here. It's hot. My mouth is dry.
I'm waiting.
You got any senators out in the hall or in the lounge, please return to the chambers. Oh, we got one rep in here. Oh, yeah. Okay. We got a rep. Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 80. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 80, sponsored by Representative Harvey, Peace Officers, Detention Officers, and Dispatchers, and Act Relating to Certification and Hiring of Peace Officers. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Ross, you heard the reading of the bill. What is your feelings on this?
You don't really want to know.
What is your consideration, Senator Ross? All right. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I hope everyone will listen very carefully. This is a very complicated bill. To start out with, there was an AG's interpretation of existing statute that changed the practice of using Wyoming peace officers who have passed the standards and training certificate to be hired by Wyoming law enforcement agencies without the time and cost of going through the recertification process. The AG's office has said that if anybody, any law enforcement person, although they have the certification and is hired part-time, has to go through the entire process as though they were a brand new officer. It is costing our local governments and our state a lot of money if they have to go through this process, because the process costs anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 by the time they go through fingerprinting, all the checks that they have to go through. So I would like you to consider this. This is hiring people for things like special occasions, like Frontier Days in the capital city, for our state parks on occasions like the 4th of July when they need extra officers. Just keep in mind, these officers are already certified. The only thing I might point out to you on the bill is on page 2, lines 13 through 16. And this is where the burden rests with verifying. It is the sole responsibility of the prospective hiring law enforcement unit to verify that the person is employed in good standing by another law enforcement unit in this state. I rest for any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 50, or I'm sorry, House Bill 80, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Okay. House Bill 80 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 75, and I'll have to have call on Senator Dennis.
House Bill 75, sponsored by Representative Davidson, Loss of Parental Rights, Homicide of Spouse, and Act Relating to Termination of Parental Rights. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye. Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 75 and for an explanation of the bill, yield to Senator Cooper.
Thank you.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is House Bill 75 is the loss of parental rights for homicidal spouse. This was a bill that was brought about by one of our colleagues that we know that had a tragedy in her family. And this bill just is pretty simple. If you look over on page 2, on lines 5 through 7, it just merely says the parent, I should start up probably at line 1 on that page and read that to you. The parent-child legal relationship may be terminated if any one of the more of the following facts is established by clear and convincing evidence. And this is just adding to another one of those clear and convincing evidence and facts. If the parent is convicted of the murder or homicide of the other parent of the child under WS 62101 through 62104, and there's if you track this through the statute, you'll see there's a list of reasons why the judge declare a loss of a parent's rights for a child in the case of this type of homicide, and that's what the bill is about. Any questions?
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, can somebody explain to me what exactly it means to lose your parental rights? Maybe one of the attorneys, maybe the good chairman of the Judiciary Committee, just could explain what the implications of that are.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, parental rights, you lose certain rights and certain responsibilities. The rights that you would lose is the right to inherit through your child, the right to have a relationship with your child. You would be no longer entitled to visitation or anything else like that with the child. However, you are still responsible for support under the law. But there are a number of reasons why termination of parental rights is given. But remember, the burden is awfully, awfully high. It is clear and convincing evidence. And TPR cases are pretty difficult. They're pretty difficult to get through. But certainly in a situation like this where you've killed your spouse, it seems that it should be one of those elements for termination of parental rights.
Seeing no question being called, all those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 75, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 75 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 94.
House Bill 94, sponsored by Representative Larkhart, Real Property Easements, and Act Relating to Easements. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the do pass on House Bill 94. And to explain the bill, I'd like to call on Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow senators, House Bill 94, Real Property Easements. This bill adds a one-sentence amendment to 34-1-141 Wyoming statutes that deals with real property easements. As you can see, the proposed amendment on page 1, and this is lines 12 through 15. The current law requires all easements to specifically describe the location of the easement and be filled be filed within 1 year of execution. But this bill does not change that part of the law, and I
like to just specify that. The amendment changes the part of the law that makes null and void an easement or agreement which grants the right to locate an easement at a later date, unless that easement is recorded within a year. This bill would be delaying that execution date once the actual location is determined and can be described accurately. Then at that point, the clock begins running on the, of course, the 1 year is spelled out in the current statutes. The original law was passed in 1981. Apparently, the law was addressed at that time because of concerns of utility rights of way that described large areas of land, like an entire quarter-quarter section or even sometimes a whole township, as being burdened by an easement. Many times they were poorly drafted and overly broad in their descriptions at the time. The problem now is that large infrastructure projects are being proposed throughout the state, and these projects in most cases take years to get through the permitting process and to construct. Because of all the changes that usually occur during the permitting and design phases, the specific location of the easement is not always known until the project is built and a survey can be conducted. However, the project developers and designers need to acquire rights to access land at the beginning of the project. These agreements usually define maybe a 200 or 300 foot wide corridor or either an approximate location, and at which time later the exact location, of course, would be filed with the easement. The purpose of House Bill 94 is to permit the use of options to obtain easements at a later date by excluding these option agreements from the meaning of easement agreement in Section B and C of the statute. This allows the interested parties to enter into agreement that recognizes the long time frame, develop a project, and yet still preserve the requirements that once the project is built, an easement that specifically describes the actual location will be filed. Stand for questions on it.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little confused on line 12, the option that's mentioned here. And I guess a couple questions. One, is it covered by the eminent domain law? Two, is it a written agreement? I'm hearing corridors, a quarter to a half mile wide or whatever those folks want. How does that fit in with the eminent domain bill for starters? And are they covered by the, if not the 1 year, which is what this paragraph, what this 141 goes to, is there any time frame on them, or are they good in perpetuity, which is what the rest of this law envisions?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cooper,
on the eminent domain question, I'm just not a legal beagle on something like that. I would not know if that would go to the eminent domain issue or not. As far as the written agreement is, yes, these options are written agreements to last for a period of time before, of course, the project starts, and also once the project is in place. If both parties agree, then the easement would be filed at a later date, and where it would be accurate and not just a guess. Third question. There was one more question there, and I can't remember. I can't even read my writing here. But anyway, the agreement is to basically let the landowners and the developers of the pipeline or power line or whatever it happens to be, to be able to get a better and more accurate description of the easement. The problem has been in the past, I understand, is that these easements were not always that accurate because sometimes they would file them, they'd be in a hurry because they were under the one-year gun to get it done, and then they'd construct the project, and the fact of the matter was in some places the easement was not, or the project was not constructed exactly where the easement was, or it was identified wrong in the papers, and then when the owner went to sell the land, there was a considerable problem there identifying that easement. So
And, Mr. Chairman, I'd have to ask the good senator for the last question. I can't remember what it was.
Senator Bebout. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand the question from my colleague from Johnson County, is if, in fact, you have an option agreement, how long is that in effect? And you're exactly right. Unless there's a contractual agreement between the parties, that being the person granting the easement and that wanting the easement, it could go on for however long the contract. If it doesn't specify, it could go on forever. And I've, in fact, thought about maybe we ought to time limit that. Maybe there's a way to do that, and I think that would make it close that loophole, because it could go on forever. And if you look 20 years from now, someone has that option agreement. It was never really taken care of, and you're trying to buy a piece of property, and then you go to the title company, and they try to do a title search. Well, probably this option agreement hasn't been recorded, and you could have a potential problem. So maybe we ought to time limit those. And I don't think that gets away from what we're trying to do with the intent of this, is to say those out there that are so broad, you know, let's be able to have those options and then give us a period of time longer than 1 year, which is all they have now, to be able to define exactly what they want for their easement. And then they have 1 year, in fact, to record that.
Seeing no more discussion on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rides his report, that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 75, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Excuse me. Stand corrected. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 94, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That bill is passed. Next bill for consideration is House Bill 97.
House Bill 97, sponsored by Representative Harshman, Nuclear Energy Production Study, an act relating to nuclear energy. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, Economic Development, puts back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Ports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Massey. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise report do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 97. And presenting this bill, I'd like to call on Senator Martin.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 97, Nuclear Energy Production Study, is an act relating to the study of nuclear energy production. This bill would create a task force who will provide a research report at the end of the study. The task force conducting the study will consist of two members of the Wyoming Senate who will be appointed by the President, one being named co-chairman, and two members of the Wyoming House of Representatives, one of which would be the other co-chairman. There will be three members appointed by the governor. One of these members will have a background in energy production, one will be a member of the Geological Survey Board, and one member will have a background in revenue and taxation. The task force will study potential incentives to encourage nuclear energy production in this state. This will include the use of unappropriated waters within the state, private and public sector partnerships, along with taxation issues. The study will look at regulatory provisions that may restrict nuclear development, the role of land use and planning, federal statutes that may preempt or limit state or county authority, and any long and short-term storage issues. The role of higher education within the state and nuclear development. The task force shall submit its information to the Joint Minerals Business and Economic Development Interim Committee and the Governor by November 1st of 2010, and the Joint Minerals Business and Economic Development Interim Committee shall develop legislation for consideration by the legislature in the 2011 General Budget Session. Mr. Chairman, that's a short overview of the bill. There is a standing committee amendment, and at this time, I would ask for it to be read in.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Bill 97, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 9.
Would you like to move that
amendment? Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97. What we have here is on page 2, line 9, we delete have a background and insert be a member of the public at large. And on page 2, line 10, delete the rest of that line. What that took out is actually the member that was identified initially that would have a background in revenue and taxation. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd answer any questions or call for the
questions on the amendment. Questions being called. All those in favor of Senator Martin's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 97 has passed. We're back on the bill. Okay. Oops, Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question here. It seems like we really are not taking a very aggressive or comprehensive approach to this issue. You know, we've gotten some amendments in some of our budget bills the last couple of years for the University of Wyoming to do some research, and we have a committee here that's really fairly modest. I'm wondering, why not just simply jump into this and find out if it's something that we could be doing here in Wyoming or should be doing? You know, why not a larger committee? You know, why not a more comprehensive study? You know, why not just simply flat out identify the issues, get the people in a room, more than a few folks here that you could squeeze into a coffee shop, and just really decide this thing and come back, you know, through an interim committee, make this one of the major points of studies for that interim committee, and really decide if we're going to do this or not.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question on the bill being called. All those in favor of Senator Larson of House Bill 97, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay. House Bill 97 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 106.
House Bill 106, sponsored by Representative Pedersen, Small Business Investment Credit, and Act Relating to Economic Development. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Business and Minerals, Business and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator C. Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill, Senator Larson.
Report. They do so with a favorable vote on House Bill Number 106, engrossed. And to present this bill, I'd like to call on Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Senate. House Bill 106 truly is an economic development bill, and it's no stranger to this body. You may recall that we debated it extensively last year, and it died. I'm not sure whether it was committee hall. I think on third reading it died in a very close vote. And what it does, I'll give you a brief overview of the theory behind the bill, then I'll tell you why it's different than last year's bill, and then go into the bill itself. What it does, Mr. Chairman, is sets up an investment pool for roughly $30 million. And I'm not sure if you've had an opportunity, but if you've talked to a lot of your small businesses, I certainly have talked to mine in my district, and also understand from a firsthand knowledge of it, is that it's difficult to get funding right now from the banks. They're very tight. They're very difficult. A lot of things that we laugh and say that even if you have a CD to secure your loan, they won't loan you the money. So there's really an opportunity here to come up with $30 million to be invested in small businesses in the state of Wyoming. The The money would come from the insurance companies in our state, and as you all know, they pay a premium to do business in our state. That premium goes into the general fund and also operates the state insurance department, and that runs between $5 and $6 million per year. This would allow those insurance companies to pay that premium to invest in upfront up to $30 million into this program, and then that money would be set up to go to what they call would be a small business entity that will be the facilitator of that, if you will, and that money would go to those small investment business groups, and then they would look at Wyoming businesses in turn to invest the money into. So the insurance companies come up with the money, it goes to an investment group involving the Wyoming Business Council, then they look at the small businesses and invest the money in those businesses. And there's some requirements that we make in the bill that they shall be headquarters within the state, have fewer than 100 employees, and agree to remain in the state after they've been involved and received the loan. And that's the whole purpose of what this trying to do, what this bill does, Mr. Chairman. The main difference between this and the last year bill is that last year we said that you could go in and refinance an SBA loan. We're saying, no, you cannot do that in the bill this year. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go through the bill. And I'm going to try to go through quickly because we've got a lot of bills I think it's important enough that we do it. Page 2, we talk about the definition of affiliate, and it deals with the investors being the insurance companies and who they are and what they can do. Page 3, we get into the allocation date. It's the date the state grants takes tax credit to the investors effectively when small businesses raise the capital and can begin making investments. We talk about the council, and that word used throughout the bill. That's the Wyoming Business Council. We talk about designated capital. That's the amount of money invested by an investor into the Wyoming Small Business Investment Company. But there again, that's the money that's the company that receives the money that invests in Wyoming companies. We go on to page 4, participating investor is the insurance company. We have qualified business. There again, that's the business in Wyoming that we're trying to fund this capital to, and I told you about the requirements of that. On to page 6, we talk about qualified debt instrument. That's a small business investment firm sells to the insurance company that's AA or AAA rated. There's a large company located in Omaha that provides this instrument.
Long days.
I'm an Omaha, my whatever. And that's how you raise the capital from the investment fund. You talk about the distribution. You go on to page 8, Mr. Chairman, qualified investment is a capital that the Wyoming small business investment firm invests in qualified businesses. We talk about the state premium tax liability. There again, that's the tax that these insurance companies pay for the opportunity to sell their insurance in this state. We talk about the Wyoming Small Business Investment Company. It's an experienced investment firm who raises capital from the insurance companies and makes investments in Wyoming small businesses. And that's the whole premise of how the bill works. We go on to page 9. We have some language about the certification of it, and how the business council accepts those applications and what they go through to ensure that it's done properly. Page 10, that the Wyoming Business Council certifies that these firms, and it's important to note that the certification process is essentially just checking boxes defined in the bill, and so it'd be sure and comply with that. They must be headquartered and licensed to do business in Wyoming and have primary business activity of making investments under this program. Page 11 goes into some language about 45 days after the receipt of an application, they shall issue a certification as to whether or not that is, in fact, the Wyoming Small Business Investment Community can do what they're intended to do. You go on to page 12, there's requirements in there. I think this is really important, Mr. Chairman. An insurance company might not own more than 15% of a Wyoming Small Business Investment Company. There's concern if they own too much of it, they would have an overriding influence on the decisions made and how they would invest their money. It goes on to say a Wyoming small investment company may obtain a guarantee wrap, if you will, for the investment to the insurance company. This, again, is that AA, AAA rated guarantee that I talked about from the entity in Omaha. Page 13 allows interim management by the guarantor in case the Wyoming small business investment company is not complying with the statute. That's a key safeguard that we need to have in the bill. Page 14, Wyoming small business investment credit. The insurance companies will receive 100% tax credit for their investment, and this is very important that we understand this. This tax will not be due until beginning in the year. Let's see, it's on the handout sheet that I gave you. I think it's 2014. So understand that these insurance companies make the investment, they put up the capital to get this whole thing started, and then in the year 2014, when their premiums are due to the state, that's when they get credit against the amount of money that they invested. We go on to page 15. It clarifies how the Wyoming Small Business Investment Company can structure the note to the insurance company, ensure that the insurance company don't have to pay retaliatory taxes because of this bill. Page 16, a small business investment firm forfeits its tax credit if it fails to act according to this act. So if an insurance company decides that after they've invested in it, they're doing things improperly, any kind of tax credit they would got is forfeited. Going on to page 17, we aggregate the limitations and allocation of it. Page 18, the credits are allocated on a pro rata basis based upon the amounts of credit requests are submitted by the Wyoming Small Business Investment Community. As you can see, and you go on to page 19, 20, 21, all of this is language in there that really protects the way we do this and ensures that all of the investment companies and working with the Wyoming Business Council is done in a way that we truly get the capital to where we want it, which is to the investment company to pass it on to Wyoming businesses. Mr. Chairman, there's more language in there that deals with that kind of information. I think that's really the essence of the bill. The bottom line is, if you feel like now's a good time for us to come up with another tool to try to have an opportunity to invest capital in Wyoming businesses, this is a tool to do it. Understand, it's from the insurance companies, and they receive the tax credits on their premiums down the road. So there will be a net impact to the general fund in the years out. However, we have information that says the jobs created, and it'll be interesting to see how that works out, more than offset the loss to the state's revenues in 4 or 5 years out. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Chairman, just very quickly, on page 14, there's the talk of the credit against premium tax, and that's a premium tax liability. I presume that's credit after the other assessments that may come against premium tax and be given as a credit against premium tax, things like guarantee funds, the assessment for the Wyoming uninsurable pool, the assessment for the high-risk pool and the small group insurance. Is that a correct understanding of the bill?
Senator Bebop.
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. We didn't ask that question in committee this year. We talked about it last year and the information I got that it did, and those had to be complied with before they got it. I will definitely check on that and get back to you if this bill moves forward for second reading.
Discussion on the bill. Okay, question. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 106, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, those opposed, say no. Okay, House Bill 106 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 59.
House Bill 59, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Workforce Service Amendments, and Act relating to workforce services. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise report it do so with the do pass recommendation on House Bill 59 engrossed, and to explain what this bill does, I'll call on Senator Honeycutt.
Senator Honeycutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Larson. This is basically just a cleanup bill that was presented to from Workforce Services to the sponsors. On page one, it's just the description of the acts that are involved. Actually, what I might just do is, on page two, within the budget bill, there's a transfer, the general fund appropriation for Serve Wyoming from the governor's office to the Department of Workforce Services. This amendment will be in statute upon the completion of this transfer. That's on page, I think it was page 20 of that thick bill, white papered bill that we had, Senate File 1. Page 2 through 3, this amendment will provide the employing units or the individual access to information maintained by the Department of Workforce Services. It explains the confidentiality that the permission has to be gained to release this information to the other unit. Page 3 through 6 is the State Rehabilitation Council and the membership and the chairman. Page 6 is the duties of the council and department. Page 7 is the authority of the council to receive gifts and grants. And a lot of this this cleanup work hasn't been done since the year 2002 when the department was first created, the Department of Employment. Page 7, basically the same thing as the Department of Workforce Services assumes the responsibility of the displaced worker education and training. This took place originally in 2002, and we're now just getting it cleaned up. Page 7, again, is basically the same thing. Updates the partners the Division of Workforce Services shall work with in establishing a plan to implement the occupational transfer and retaining programs and services for displaced workers. I hope that's fairly clear.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a clue why we moved this to the governor's office back when we did, something to do with some federal grant or requirement or something. So basically all this is doing is taking it back out of the governor's office, putting it in Workforce Services where I think it properly belongs. But the reason we did it, some of you other senators that have been here that long, I can't remember, quite frankly, nor did we have anyone else who really knew why we did. I think it was to do with a federal grant, but we moved it to the governor's office, and now we're taking it back, putting it where it belongs.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, it was moved when the current administration showed up. They took it out of the governor's office, and they put them out on their own as a nonprofit. But there's federal money that comes into it, and if I remember right, from when we moved it back, that federal money is contingent on it being in the governor's office. So my question to the presenter, was there any discussion on whether we'd lose those federal funds or not if it was any place other than the governor's office?
Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, I don't remember any discussion, and I would assume that if they were to lose money, they definitely would have brought that issue up to us.
Any further discussion on the bill? Ready? Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 59, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. House Bill 59 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 47.
House Bill 47, sponsored by Representative Childers. NEPA and ESA Review, an act relating to federal policy. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, S. Meyer. No, Senator Burns. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee rises to report. Am I on?
You're on.
I move that, Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 47, NEPA and ESA Review. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, which I would ask be read in now.
Did the reading clerk read in the amendment?
House Bill 47, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 4, line 21.
Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment, all it does is change the effective date from July 1st to being effective immediately upon completion of all acts necessary for a bill to become a law. Mr. Chairman, for a further explanation of this bill, I ask that you call on the senator from Riverton because he's got some splaining to do.
Senator Bebop. Good senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, an old friend that we've seen before for many, many years. And first of all, I think I remember the debate last year. Someone asked a question, that why can't we just walk down to the Attorney General and ask him to do this? And I see someone smiling over the corner because he remembers who asked that question. And certainly it was him. And the answer is yes, it's true. You know, there's nothing that says you couldn't go down and ask the Attorney General to do just what this does. Or that you couldn't ask the governor to really make an emphasis on this, because certainly that's within his purview. I think the importance of this and why I've supported it for a long time is that I think it, because of what's going on right now with our federal government and particularly under NEPA and the Endangered Species Act, that we ought to at least let the Attorney General know that the intention and what we're trying to do in this legislature relative to the importance of those decisions. And if you read the bill, it says that, you know, it says things like the Attorney General shall investigate potential litigation against the federal government relative to all these different things that they're doing to the state. And obviously, like I said, you would think that the Attorney General would do that. And you can also say, it also goes into on page 2 on line 6 that he can include it in an exception budget. And I think that's pretty important, because certainly there could be some situations where there's extra funds required, and we get into the issue of if you would talk about specifically like up in Park County, where we dealt with the issue of the number of snowmobiles allowed to go into Yellowstone Park, and representing us, the state representing the county and all of our interests in that matter, and spend a lot of money, that would be part of it as well. And then you can go on to page 2, line 16C, the investigation or litigation initiated by the Attorney General shall include determination whether state of Wyoming entitled to damages. And there again, if you go into the NEPA Act, and I think this is an important part of it, because on page 3 it gets into different sections of the NEPA law, 101, 103, 104, and clearly within the NEPA Act, there's requirements in there that when they look at how they do and when they make their decisions, they take on and consider the economic impact to the counties and the people of Wyoming when they make those decisions. And that's really what 101, 103, and 104 talk about in different degrees. And there again, once again, the Attorney General would say, okay, I think we need to get involved in litigation and get in and go down and try to have a very serious discussion with the feds on what they're doing relative to NEPA and what it means. It gets also into the relisting of the wolves. And of course, we understand where that is and what the Attorney General is doing there. Mr. Chairman, it's a bill. It's more than just a warm, fuzzy feeling. I think it really lets the Attorney General know the seriousness we think about this issue and how we want to provide him a little nudge in the direction we think is important, NEPA and Endangered Species Act. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think it's really not much more than a resolution in a bill form, and it's probably a lot cheaper just to go downstairs and talk to the Attorney General. As it turns out, just by circumstance, in having dinner at the governor's mansion or his house last week, I happened to be sitting at the same table as the Attorney General and the house sponsor of this bill, and listened to a fascinating conversation about this. And in reality, he is already doing all this. He understands the importance of it. And here's a point that I think was made at that dinner table, and I think I'm accurately conveying it, and that is we have to be careful where we jump in with regard to lawsuits. And we have to be careful because we need to know what the likely results are going to be. In other words, if the Attorney General feels forced to litigate a specific case, we could wind up with an adverse opinion that we're not going to be able to reverse. And things could be worse. In other words, in order to really get up to the Supreme Court, it's a lot of strategy playing that goes on. It's a chess match. And you have to be strategic and really careful about where you want to make your case at. And the attorneys here could either back that up or verify it or say that, no, I'm off the mark. But I think that that's the point that he was making. And he was just concerned that by having a bill passed and sent down to him, that it may be reducing his options, actually. But he is already aggressively pursuing this. He just as concerned as the bill sponsor about the issues that are being raised here. I think, although he didn't say specifically, so this is my opinion, I think that he would be concerned about the top of page 2, where it says, when considering whether to initiate or intervene in litigation, the Attorney General shall give precedence to lawsuits whose venue is within Wyoming. Based upon a strategy and trying to thread that needle and coming up with the case that will carry Wyoming's argument, if it's not set here in Wyoming, then he would be precluded from pursuing it. And that may not necessarily be in our best interest. So my recommendation or my suggestion is that if the body wants to move forward with this legislation and send it down to him, that we change that shall to may and make sure that he has the flexibility he needs to really pursue this effectively.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
You know, we've talked about this bill in years past, provisions like this, but I'd add the following. Right now, the Attorney General is the chief law enforcement office for the executive branch. And the Attorney General serves at the pleasure of the governor. The governor has a policy, fund within his budget called the Natural Resources Policy Contingency Fund that he can draw on to litigate these kinds of things. The Attorney General is not an elected person. So that right now what happens is that if the governor chooses for the state of Wyoming to become a party to an action, the governor makes a decision. He's the chief elect. He's elected to make that decision. And then he directs his attorney general that he has appointed to go out and engage in whatever litigation. And because of that, the people of Wyoming know that the Attorney General is not going to be out engaging in activities or lawsuits that he may choose. He has to implement the direction of the governor. Now what we're saying is that we're giving the authority and a direction to an Attorney General who's not an elected person to go out and begin to join these lawsuits. In fact, maybe even giving him a budget where he is apparently not accountable to anybody, not an elected person. And, you know, if you read this language, he could actually go out and engage in a lawsuit that would be against our interests. There's nothing in here that says it has to be for our interest. Today, the protection is that the governor is the boss. The governor directs the Attorney General to do it. If the governor needs a budget, he comes to, he either has his contingency fund, or if he wants additional funds, he goes to the legislature and says, would you fund this amount? And if the Attorney General ends up in litigation he doesn't belong in, the governor is accountable. And I submit to you that's where it belongs, not with a non-elective person to decide which lawsuits to get in or out. There are a lot of young attorney generals out there, and they might be quite competent. But if they go out and start searching the lawsuits and trying to figure out which ones they want to be in and which ones they're going to not be in, you need more staff. And then you better hope like heck that they see the world the same way you do. But right now, I submit to you that the governor can make these decisions. He's the appropriate person to make this. And it's not appropriate to delegate this duty or to assign it by statute to somebody that's not elected.
Further discussion. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I, too, share the concern of the Chairman of Appropriations. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll draw your attention to page 2, line 8, where the critical word, a little four-letter word, the Attorney General can request an appropriation from the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account. If you look up that account in the statute, it's the one that's controlled by the governor. And what this subparagraph B allows the Attorney General to do is take it out of the governor's purview, out of the account he supervises, and put it into his own budget, to do whatever he wishes to do with it. so long as he's complying with this act, which may or may not be in the interest of the people. Whereas 9.4.218 says it's got to be in the interest of the people. What this does is give the Attorney General some sort of left field bailiwick out there and gives him a way to fund it outside of the normal channels of government. That's a dangerous thing to give a lawyer particularly. Or anybody else particularly.
Majority floor leader, Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, like we say, this has been an old friend. I think it's appropriate that this bill has received the conversation, the debate that it has. The points, I think, on both sides have been most appropriate, but I think it's probably time that we deal with this and what we feel, and I'll leave that to you, what you think is an appropriate action on this bill. I would call for the question.
Question being called. Oh, Senator Burns, there was a standing committee amendment on this. Did we cover that? We did not. Okay. Okay. Any discussion on that standing committee amendment?
If,
question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt standing committee amendment number one to House Bill 47, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no.
No.
Motion to adopt standing committee number one to House Bill number 47 is passed. We're back on the bill. Okay.
Question
on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 47, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Oh, no, he's got it. Okay. Well, yeah, right. Yeah, House. Well, really? Do you want division? Okay, we'll have division. All those in favor, please stand. That's the call. Okay. All those opposed, please stand. Okay. Let's get that. Okay, pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5 having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott? Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 7 ayes, 23 noes.
House Bill 47, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, little a, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 19.
House Bill 19, sponsored by Representative Bagby, mandatory saving accounts for inmates, an act relating to Department of Correction inmates. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Whoops.
So with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 19, Mandatory Savings Accounts for Inmates, and to explain this fine bill, Senator Elliott.
Senator Elliott. I'm getting you on. I've got you're on.
All right.
Whoops, you were on. Sorry.
Testing. Now I am.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, I understand, although I don't know it from firsthand experience, that this might be an old friend as well. It has been here, I understand, before for consideration, at least last year. The bill, which is House Bill 19, purports to establish a mandatory savings account amounting to 10% of the earnings of a prisoner at a Department of Corrections institution. It came to us through the Department of Corrections. The notion is to, of course, carving out the prisoners that are serving sentences on page 2 of either death or life without the possibility of parole. The 10% of their payroll is designed to create a mandatory savings account that will be turned over to them at the time they are released from prison. Coincidentally, when I received this bill and some of the notes from my colleague in the House, I received a newspaper from Carbon County that talked about the other attempts by the Department of Correction to avoid recidivism. They're putting inmates in what they call their pre-release program through 7 modules: traditional issues, life skills, employability, job search skills, financial management, community resources, and health issues. This is simply another methodology used in having the inmates fund their own mandatory savings accounts to see if we can keep recidivism rates from being as high as they have been in the past. The notion is that if you give them a ticket to their choice of place, you still have to worry about where they're going to be staying. What will they have for food after they get there? Will they be in halfway houses or God knows where? This at least gives us another tool for the Department of Corrections to utilize in terms of trying to impact the recidivism rate. I think it's a concept that may work. Whether it will work or not, I can't really say, but it certainly seems to me a valid attempt. At little or no cost to the state, there is no fiscal requirement on this bill, to at least try and improve the recidivism rates of the Department of Correction. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Several years ago, we looked at some money coming out of the prisoner's account. And I believe there was testimony back then that the account was originally put together to cover the incidentals of the inmates for why they were in prison. And then several years ago, we took, I believe it was 33% of that. So if they have a wife and kids back home, the 33% of that goes back to the wife and kids. So another 10% on that. So we're up 43% on an account that was originally put together for incidentals so they could buy what they wanted to out of the drugstore and the shop around there. So my question would be is, aren't we taking the incidental account away from it and cutting them now 43% shorter than what it was originally put together for?
Senator Elliott.
I'll try and answer that as best I can. This is an amendment to the same statute that does have other priorities for the utilization of the earnings that are made by inmates. It's simply, I think it's Romanette I in the list of potential categories. And I am told that the amount of money that an inmate can earn for the services that they perform at the Department of Correction varies a great deal on what kind of skills they happen to have. There are people that may earn $20 a day for laboring type work. Others may earn as much as several hundred dollars a day if they happen to be heavy equipment operators that can do some of the work that's required around the penitentiary grounds and have achieved the trust of the people that manage that. So a little bit might depend, in response to the senator's question, on what kind of payment the individual is receiving. Obviously, the funds are prioritized, and the comment has been made that very few, if any, of the inmates save any portion of their earnings, even if they have larger sums of money coming in than would seem to be necessary for incidentals like extra food, extra discretionary items that they can purchase through the store. This is an attempt to mandate a 10% increase, yes, over the other priorities, in order to try and give the inmate savings, and the inmate may not have savings that are sufficient to meet the $1,000 threshold. Once it reaches the $1,000 threshold, then all other earnings are not put away in this account. It's a mandatory savings account up to a maximum of $1,000. And that was thought to be the amount necessary to at least attempt to give the individual some money to carry himself or herself over once they're released and reach a destination.
Further discussion on the bill. Majority Floor Leader, Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Just quickly, Mr. Chairman, you know, this bill was one of the very next ones up last year when the clock ran out, or when we called time out anyway. And I regretted that after I saw this bill and gave a little further attention to it. I took some time to talk to the corrections people upon a visit to Torrington. And, you know, the good senator from Saratoga has given a very, I think, eloquent, detailed explanation how this breaks out. I would simply say that I think that this is a good bill. I think it's really in line with the new prison we've opened in regard to careful attention to recidivism and how we can best launch these inmates into a successful path after they leave the institution. And having said that, I would just hope that you would give it your most favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's important for folks to know what this bill does. It does, in addition to just creating the savings account, it changes the priorities that are in the existing statute. In the existing statute, this money that's earned is applied in the following order: personal necessities and assessments, of fees for program service assistance, then it goes to support of dependents and relations of the prisoners, then it goes to court ordered restitution, and then any remaining funds paid to the prisoners upon parole or discharge. This bill comes in and says that 10% of that prison, some 10% of that pay is more important than any of those other items, and it has to be saved. And that also moves the personal necessities down to number three, leaves supported dependents number two, then the prisoner becomes number three, court-ordered restitution will become number four, and then remaining funds become number six. So it does a little bit more than that, and I think you need to be careful in looking at that. I mean, what we're doing, we're saying your savings account's more important than your personal dependents. And there's support obligations you have outside of prison, and I don't know if that's the right message to send.
Further discussion on the bill? Question. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatiron's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 19, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Okay. House Bill 19 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 20.
House Bill 20, sponsored by Representative Bagby, Criminal Street Gangs, an act relating to crimes and offenses. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Ross, and Sessions. No, Senators Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a due-pass recommendation on House Bill 20. And for an explanation of the bill, I yield again to the good senator from the Mother County.
Senator Elliott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I present to you House Bill number 20, which carries the cryptic title of Criminal Street Gangs. This is an act trying to respond to requests from law enforcement with regard to the activities in the state of Wyoming by certain criminal street gangs. And by this, we do not mean to indicate bicycle groups or anything of that sort acting in a lawful fashion. Each of you received a handout that has both Representative Bagby's and my name on it, and that refers to Wyoming gang activity within the state of Wyoming. And the U.S. Department of Justice provided the information that's contained in this documentation. And frankly, when I looked at it before I agreed to put my name on the bill, I was surprised at the amount of activity, and this is only really reporting through the year 2008 in the state of Wyoming. I also ask you to look at, as I go through the bill, the letter from a young lady who is the superintendent of Fremont County School District number 14. That is the last item on that handout. And it particularly gives at least a teacher's observation of what impact gang activities are having and prospectively may be having on school activities of her students. This bill is important for a couple of reasons, and I don't pretend to know all of the answers to the issues that are involved in that regard, but it creates, first, a definition of what constitutes intimidation in furtherance of the interests of a criminal street gang. That's on page 1 at 6-2-403, and attempts to define the conduct that would be necessary to meet that requirement. Intimidation is further defined on page 2 at line 5, and then the definitions are gone into, beginning with Romanet 14 at the bottom of page 2, defining what is meant by a, quote, criminal street gang. This continues on the top of the next page with definitions dealing with the pattern of criminal street gang activity, which I think is designed to create the intent that is necessary, and then looks at all of the other definitions of what offenses might meet the requirement of pattern of criminal activity spelled out on page three, lines 4 down through lines 24, and continuing on the top of the next page, down through all of that page, onto the top of page 5. This is an act which is designed to give an additional tool to law enforcement in the additional charging of criminal street gang activity only when the circumstances, as defined in the act, warrant the application of that requirement. I submit the bill to you as another tool to be used by law enforcement, and I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Questions on the bill? Okay, question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 20, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 20 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 132.
House Bill 132, sponsored by Representative Davidson. Homicide During Pregnancy 2, an act relating to homicide. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, and Scott. No, Senator Schiffer, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. Senator Scott, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move from the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 132 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I'm going to take the liberty of explaining this bill myself.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, what this is enhanced penalties for murdering a pregnant woman. Now, Mr. Chairman, it is the duty of any man to be specially protective of women who are pregnant. It's just part of our fundamental biology. And it seems to me it is difficult, I think, for those of us here in the Senate to understand how anybody worthy of being called a man could go out and murder somebody, murder a woman they knew was pregnant. but that's the element of this crime. There are some other places in the statute, Mr. Chairman, if you assault a pregnant woman, don't murder her, just assault her, it automatically becomes aggravated assault. So that's been handled. If it's first-degree murder, some of the penalties there, death and life without parole, you can't make any worse. There's no point enhancing anything there. This deals with the other homicides. And speaking to the need for this bill, we had an earlier version of this bill in Committee 10 a few years ago. And at that time, we had an individual who was at the time the chief of police for the city of Cheyenne on the committee. And some of us said to him, how could any man do something like this? And he said, the fact of the matter is, some of them do. And they do it because the woman is pregnant. You get a heat of passion, which is the manslaughter definition. You get the crime with knowing intentionally but without premeditation, that's second degree. They actually do those things. And it's a significant law enforcement problem in this state and probably all over. What this bill does is says that's a special and a more heinous version of the crime. It takes our existing mandatory minimum on second degree murder and bumps it from 20 years to 40 years. I think that's appropriate. It takes our manslaughter and drug-induced homicide, which apparently is another way they do it, and puts a 10-year mandatory minimum on those. So that you're going to take people who would be so low as to do this and lock them up for a while. Mr. Chairman, I think it's appropriate. I urge the Senate to adopt the bill. I stand for any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 132, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Okay. House Bill 132 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 89.
House Bill 89, sponsored by Representative Gilmore, Resident Contractor Preferences, and Act relating to construction contracts with public entities. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flader, Senator Von Flader, and Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill, Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I hope they do so with a do-pass recommendation, House Bill 89, Resident Contract Preference. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in now, and I will take care of that.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment. Oops.
House Bill 89, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 9.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee 1 to House Bill 89. Fellow Senators, what this does in the bill is it takes out professional services. This bill sort of caught them in the bidding process or that they would have to bid or it can be construed that professional services would have to be bid. Our own statutes remove them from that process and would conflict with that particular title. And also any federal project, state project that may have some hidden federal money somewhere in there, they are also prohibited from bidding those services. They're based on the quality, past experience, so forth, of a professional entity such as a engineer, surveyor, architects. And this bill sort of caught them up in the bidding process. So I ask for your favorable vote on Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 89.
Discussion on the amendment. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flader's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 89, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion to adopt standing committee number 1 to House Bill House Bill 89 is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Von Feder.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll turn the bill, I'll yield the floor to Senator Hastert to explain this fine little bill.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 89, it's a jobs bill. It restores preference for contractors, for in-state contractors, and the Wyoming workers that they employ, Mr. Chairman. There was a fact sheet handed out just a few minutes ago, and you're going to see on there that all the characters involved on this, or all the actors involved, since we've been using that term, the labor organizations and those that do the work, as far as the contractors and all those different organizations, have come together collaboratively and agreed on this. Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, this bill just restores the preference, levels the playing field, and is a good bill for our Wyoming in-state subcontractors. It gets them working, and that's what we want to do. And I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion. Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to be sure I understand that this is not if you have a sealed bid where it's a low bidder, and then they, in fact, whoever the low bidder is, you're not asking them to also come in with all their subs and have present all those bids, because a lot of times when you do that kind of bidding, you don't have those subs technically signed up in an agreement, so you're not talking about that.
Senator Hastert. Senator Hastert?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, no, that's correct. This is just to the public works contract. It just restores the transparent bidding, and I think that's correct.
Further discussion on the bill? Okay. Question being called? Okay. All those in favor of Senator Von Flagren's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report, that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 89, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Okay. House Bill 89 passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 77.
House Bill 77, Youth Archery Licenses, sponsored by Representative Byrd, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, S. Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns, what is your...
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 77. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would like to explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this bill basically does is reduces the price for archery licenses for youth, just as it says. One of the things I checked with Game and Fish, there are a number of youth licenses throughout the statutes dealing with hunting issues. This is actually the last one they intend to do, because the only thing left are the really big stuff like bear and sheep and things that are really in demand. And what it would do is reduce the price of a license from for the resident youth archery license would go from $16 down to $6, and for non-resident would go from $30 down to $12. Mr. Chairman, we're constantly trying to recruit young people into hunting, and for oddly enough, the archery is actually the area where hunting is actually increasing, both in youth and in residency. Mr. Chairman, I would like to keep my presentation short, so I'll stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 77, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill 77 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 09.
House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution. No wonder it was a small number. Sorry.
House Joint Resolution 9, sponsored by Representative Simpson. Resolution to amend the United States Constitution, a joint resolution demanding Congress to cease and desist from enacting mandates that are beyond the enumerated powers granted to the Congress by the United States Constitution. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, who report back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson. Excuse, Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. Senator Case, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Joint Resolution Number 9, Resolution to Amend the United States Constitution. Mr. Chairman, before I yield to anyone, why don't we just do the Standing Committee Amendment, because it'll be real simple and easy, and I would ask that to be read in.
Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Joint Resolution 9, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 8.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 9. Mr. Chairman, I've been informed that when you change the United States Constitution, you ought to use the right word, and the right word is effect, not affect.
Any discussion on the amendment? Question on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 9, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 House Joint Resolution Number 9 has passed. Back on the bill. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would certainly yield to one of these fine co-sponsors here that have their name on this.
You have any takers?
I don't have my name on it, Mr. Chairman. But, Mr. Chairman, this is a proposal to amend the United States Constitution. As you can see, it's got a lot of flowery, nice resolution language and a lot of findings. There's more whereases than I got whereases at home that I could come up with in a big day. But the key point is that it asks Congress to amend the Constitution. And what happens is that it will now read, the powers not expressly delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. This amendment shall be construed by all courts as a rule of interpretation and construction in any case involving an interpretation of any constitutional power claimed by Congress. And here's the incorporated text of the Constitution, page 5, lines 10 through 14. Congress shall have the power to directly regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes, with no authority in Congress to regulate matters that are primarily interstate with only an insignificant or collateral effect upon interstate commerce. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. I think one of these brave co-sponsors ought to get up and do a little bit more on it, but that's the proposed joint resolution.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Are you?
Yes, Senator Larson, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Historically, as many of you know on this thing, I don't usually vote against resolutions, except when they actually do something. This expressly asks that the Constitution be amended to include this language. Therefore, I am going to vote for it. But those that just makes feel good and send it back, I will continue to vote against. This, I think, is expressly asked Congress to do something and make the amendment, so I urge you to support it.
Any further discussion? Senator Massey, you can join me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the co-sponsors on the bill. On page 4, Section 1, it quotes Article 5 of the Constitution. And there's two ways to amend the United States Constitution. One is by two-thirds of both houses. And the other one is a constitutional convention, but that can only be implemented on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states. So which one are we implementing here? Which one are we using? Is this an official application from the state of Wyoming to call a constitutional convention as listed in Article 5? That's the key part. I mean, the other one, Congress initiates, and so are we then Instead, if we're not doing that, are we then asking Congress to initiate on their own action that two-thirds of each House pass this amendment? And that's pretty critical. That's important to know before we make a vote here, because if it's the call of constitutional convention, then this is a formal application to Congress to do that. And then, of course, when you do have a constitutional convention, the entire Constitution is opened up for possible amendment at that time. So, again, the question to the sponsors, which one of these two are we intending to implement?
Further discussion on resolution. Yes, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, to dovetail with what the good senator from Albany County just said, I'd like to remind the Senate that last year we passed a bill, a resolution actually, that withdrew all our previous requests for Article 5 constitutional convention. So, you know, are we just starting over again? Have we turned the Etch-a-Sketch upside down and shaken it?
A discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not a co-sponsor of this, and I'm afraid I almost put it in the feel-good category. But in answer to the question, when you look at the language on page 4, section 1, in conjunction with the language on page 5, starting at line 20, that Congress shall specify that the amendments to the 10th Amendment Interstate Commerce Clause, Constitution of the United States, provided herein, shall be operative upon ratification by the legislatures, three-quarters of the several states. We're not asking for a constitutional convention. We are asking them to initiate these amendments via the conventional process that has been used over these many years to amend the Constitution. So it's a very important question. It's a very important distinction. And I think this is clear as to what we're trying to do here.
Go to Senator Meyer. Did you before? Okay, Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly correct. This calls for the Wyoming congressional delegation and Congress take action to initiate the amendment process provided by Article 5. It's similar language on the other. It's the states that take action to call a constitutional convention. And, Mr. Chairman, I do remind the body that if two-thirds of both houses of Congress do propose an amendment to the Constitution, the states, that any amendment to the Constitution still needs to be ratified by three-quarters of the state. And it does get a little confusing in that instance because the states can do it in two ways. States can have their own convention to ratify, but it's not the convention that you're all worried about. But states do have that alternative to ratify a change to the Constitution. But that's the process, Mr. Chairman. This is not a big constitutional confab, which indeed we have pulled back on doing so. I might argue with you whether that was a good idea or not. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, this does not do that.
Other discussion on a resolution? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Joint Resolution number 9, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Wow. Chairs in doubt, would everyone saying aye please stand? Those opposed, please stand. Okay. Okay. All right. Hold her down now. House Joint Resolution number 9 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 65. And final and end.
House Bill 65, sponsored by the Management Council, Revisors Bill, an act relating to revision of inadvertent errors. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hines, Massey, Ross, and Session. Senator Hines, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bills, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it does so with a due pass recommendation on joint House Resolution Number 10. And I'll yield the floor to who is going to speak on it.
House Bill 65, yes.
We're not on 10? Excuse me, then. I wasn't looking. Okay. Mr. Chairman, excuse me.
Okay.
I move that when the committee whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 65. This is a reviser bill, and I yield the floor to Vice President Ross.
Senator Vice President Ross.
Thank you, members of the Senate. House Bill 65 is a reviser's bill. I mean, I think you can read the caption and know what this bill does. It corrects inadvertent errors, correcting statutory references and language resultant from inadvertent errors and omissions, and correcting obsolete references and repealing fully executed provisions and providing for an effective date. Now, I can go through each of these, but they are grammatical, mostly. There are some sites that have been changed given the passage of new laws along the way. If anybody has any questions to this, but this is the reviser's bill. It has been gone through by your Rules Committee, and we went through each and every one of these in committee and would urge your favorable consideration.
Discussion on this wonderful little bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Hines's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 65, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Okay, House Bill 65 is passed Committee of the Whole, and that is clear as the desk, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Oops, sorry.
Eyes and report.
You heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, say no. Okay.
Reading clerk will read the committee the whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 72, do pass amended. House Bill 61, do pass. House Bill 36, do pass. House Bill 18, do pass amended. House Bill 83, do pass amended. House Bill 128, do pass amended. House Bill 64, do pass amended. House Bill 111, do pass. House Bill 122, do pass amended. House Bill 79, do pass amended. House Bill 95, do pass amended. House Bill 34, do pass. House Bill 44, do pass amended. House Bill 15, do pass amended. House Bill 80, do pass. House Bill 75, do pass. House Bill 94, do pass. House Bill 97, do pass amended. House Bill 106, do pass. House Bill 59, do pass. House Bill 47, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 19, do pass. House Bill 20, do pass. House Bill 132, do pass. House Bill 89, do pass amended. House Bill 77, do pass. House Joint Resolution 9, do pass amended, and House Bill 65, do pass. Senator Cooper, Chairman.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, no. Motion passed. Messages from the House.
February the 28th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message number 7. Mr. President, the House has completed consideration of the Budget Bill, Senate File 1, pursuant to Joint Resolution 14-1, Senate File 1 is referred directly to a conference committee of 5 members from each House to meet and report recommended amendments for final consideration by both houses with respect to Budget Bill Senate File 1 and House Bill 1 and the amendments thereto. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. You want it back?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, March 2nd.
Announcement. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources, will meet at 8 o'clock in the morning in room 302. We're going to talk about, I guess, grasshoppers and a few things like that. I don't know. The Department of Agriculture is coming over and fill us in.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet upon adjournment tonight in H8 to consider joint interim topics.
You've heard the announcement. You've heard the motion that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 2nd. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is adjourned.